ശുപാദ പരമഹംസ പരിവ്രാജകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തര ശതശ്രീമാൻ അഭയചരണാരവിന്ദ ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത ഗോസ്വാമി മഹാരാശീല പ്രഭുപാദ ജയം ശ്രീലാഷ്ടവിഷുപാദ പരമഹംസ പരിവ്രാജകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തര ശതശ്രീമാൻ ഭക്തസിദ്ധാന്ത സരസ്വതി മഹാരാശീല പ്രഭുപാദിക്ക് അനന്തകോടി വൈഷ്ണവ വൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് നാമാചാര്യശീല ഹരദാസ് ഠാക്കൂർക്ക് പ്രേം സഹോ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണ ചൈതന്യ പ്രഭു നിത്യാനന്ദ ശ്രീ അദ്വൈത ഗദാധാര ശ്രീവാസാദി ഗൗരഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ശ്രീ ശ്രീ രാധാകൃഷ്ണ ഗോപഗോപിനാഥ ശ്യാമകുണ്ട രാധാകുണ്ഡഗിരി ഗോവർദ്ധാനിക്ക് വൃന്ദാവൻ ധാമിക്ക് മായപ്പൂർ ധാമിക്ക് മധുരപുരി ധാമിക്ക് ജഗന്നാഥ്പുരി ധാമിക്ക് ദ്വാരകാപുരി ധാമിക്ക് ഗംഗമായിക്ക് യമുനമായിക്ക് തുളസിദേവിക്ക് ഭക്തിദേവിക്ക് സമവേദ ഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ഓ പ്രേമാനന്ദി ഓ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ദി അസംബ്ലി ഗോഡ് ഓ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ദി അസംബ്ലി ഗോഡ് ഓ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ദി അസംബ്ലി ഗോഡ് ഓ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ഓ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ശ്രീ ശ്രീ ഗുരു ആൻഡ് ഗൗരാംഗ ഓ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ശ്രീ പ്രഭുപാദ നമോ വിഷ്ണുപദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസായ ഭൂതലേ ശ്രീമതി ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത സ്വാമി നിധി നാമിനേ നമസ്തേ സരസ്വതി ദേവീം ഗൗരവാണി പ്രചാരിണി ദുർവിശേഷ ശൂന്യവാദി പാശ്ചാത്യ ദേശധാരിണി ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ ഓം അജ്ഞാനതിമിരാന്ധസ്യ ജ്ഞാനാഞ്ജനശലാകയ ചക്ഷുരുന്മീലാമ്യേന തസ്മൈ ശ്രീഗുരവേ നമഃ ശ്രീചൈതന്യമനോഭീഷ്ടം സ്ഥാപിതാം യേന ഭൂതലേ സ്വയം രൂപകദാ മഹ്യം ദദാതി സുപദാന്തികം വന്ദേഹം ശ്രീഗുരു ശ്രീയുതാപദകമലം ശ്രീഗുരും വൈഷ്ണവാംശ്ച ശ്രീരൂപം സാഗ്രജാതം സഹഗണരഘുനാഥാന്വിതം തം സജീവം സദ്വൈതം സാവധൂതം പരിജനസഹിതം കൃഷ്ണചൈതന്യദേവം ശ്രീ രാധാകൃഷ്ണപദാന് സഹഗണലളിതാം ശ്രീവിശാഖാംശ്ച ഓം വിഷ്ണുപദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസ്ഥായ ഭൂതലേ ശ്രീമതി ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത സ്വാമിനി നാമിനേ നമസ്തേ സരസ്വതി ദേവീം ഗൗരവാണി പ്രചാരിണേ നിർവിശേഷ ശൂന്യവാദി പാശ്ചാത്യദേശധാരിണേ നമോം വിഷ്ണുപദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസ്ഥായ ഭൂതലേ ശ്രീമതി ഭക്തിസിദ്ധാന്ത സരസ്വതി നാമിനേ ശ്രീ വർഷഭാനവി ദേവി വേദായ കൃപാഗയെ കൃഷ്ണ സംബന്ധ വിജ്ഞാനം ദായിനേ പ്രഭവേ നമഃ ജ്വല പ്രേമാദ്യ ശ്രീരൂപാനുഗ ഭക്തിദ ശ്രീ ഗൗരകരുണാശക്തി വിഗ്രഹായ നമോസ്തുതേ നമസ്തേ ഗൗരവാണി ശ്രീ മൂർത്തയേ ദിനദായിനേ രൂപാനുഗ വിരുദ്ധാഭ സിദ്ധാന്തം മന്ദഹാരിണേ നമോ ഗൗരകിശോരായ സാക്ഷാത് വൈരാഗ്യമൂർത്തയെ വിപ്രലംബരസാംബോധേ പദാംബുജായതേ നമ നമോ ഭക്തിവിനോദായ സച്ചിദാനന്ദനാമിനെ ഗൗരശക്തി സ്വരൂപായ രൂപനുഗവരായതേ ഗൗരാവിർഭവഭൂമേസ്ത്വം നിർദ്ദേഷ്ട സജനപ്രിയ വൈഷ്ണവ സർവഭൗമ ശ്രീ ജഗന്നാഥായതേ നമ വാചകൽപ്പതരുഭ്യശ്ച കൃപാസിന്ധുഭ്യേവ ച പതിനാലാം പാവനേഭ്യോ വൈഷ്ണവേഭ്യോ നമോ നമഃ പ്രേമപ്രദായ കൃഷ്ണായ കൃഷ്ണ ചൈതന്യനാമ്യേ ഗൗരത്വശേ നമഃ പഞ്ചതത്വാത്മകം കൃഷ്ണം ഭക്തരൂപസ്വരൂപകം ഭക്താവതാരം ഭക്താഖ്യം നമാമി ഭക്തശാസ്ത്രീയം സിന്ധോ ദീനബന്ധോ ജഗൽപദേ ഗോപേശ ഗോപികാകാന്ത രാധാകാന്ത നമോസ്തുതേ ജയം സുരദുർഭംഗോർ മമ മന്ദമലേർഗതി മത്സർവസ്വമലാംബോജോ രാധാ മദനമോഹനോ ദിവ്യവൃന്ദാരണ്യകൽപദ്രുമാദ ശ്രീമന്ദരത്നാകര സിംഹാസനസ്ഥോ ശ്രീമാദാശീല ഗോവിന്ദ ദേവോ പ്രേക്ഷാളി സേവ്യമാനോ സ്മരാമി ശ്രീമന്ദ്രാസരസാരംഭി വംശീവടതടസ്ഥിത കർഷൻ വേണുസ്വനേർഗോപേർ ഗോപിനാഥ ശ്രീയേസ്തുനാം ഭക്തകാഞ്ചന ഗൗരാംഗീ രാധേ വൃന്ദാവനേശ്വരി വൃഷഭാനുസുതേ ദേവി പ്രണമാമി ഹരിപ്രിയേ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണചൈതന്യപ്രഭോധാരശിവാസാദിഗൗരഭക്തവൃന്ദ ഹരേ കൃഷ്ണ 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 ഹരേ 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 രാമ 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 ഹരേ 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 കൃഷ്ണ 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 ഹരേ 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 രാമ 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 ഹരേ 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 കൃഷ്ണ 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 ഹരേ 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 രാമ 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 ഹരേ 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 കൃഷ്ണ 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 ഹരേ ഹരേ
ഹരേ രാമ
രാമ രാമ ഹരേ ഹരേ ഓം പാഠായ പ്രതിബോധിതാം ഭഗവതാം നാരായണേന സ്വയം വ്യാസേന ഗ്രഥിതാം പുരാണമുനിനാം മഹാഭാരതം അദ്വൈതാമൃതവർഷിണീം ഭഗവതീം അഷ്ടാദശാധ്യായിനീം അംബ ത്വാമനുസന്ദധാമി ഭഗവത്ഗീതയേ ഭവദ്വേഷിണീം നമോസ്തു തേ വ്യാസവിശാലബുദ്ധി പുരാരവിന്ദായ തവത്ര നേത്രം യേന ത്വയാ ഭാരതതൈലപൂർണ പ്രജ്വാലിതോ ജ്ഞാനമയ പ്രദീപം പ്രപന്ന പാരിജാതായ തോത്രവേത്രൈകപാണയേ ജ്ഞാനമുദ്രായ കൃഷ്ണായ ഗീതാമൃതദുഹേ നമഃ സർവ ഉപനിഷദോ നാമോ ദോഹാ ഗോപാലനന്ദനം പാർത്ഥോ വത്സസുധീർഭോക്താ ഗീതാമൃതം മഹത് വസുദേവസുതം ദേവം കംസചാണൂരമർദനം ദേവകീ പരമാനന്ദം കൃഷ്ണം വന്ദേ ജഗദ്ഗുരും ഭീഷ്മദ്രോണതടാ ജയദ്രഥജലാ ഗാന്ധാര നീലോൽപല ശയ്യഗ്രാഹവതീ കൃപേണ മഹനീ കർണേന വേലാകുല കൈവർത്തകേശവാരാശര്യവജസ്സരോജമലം ഗീതാർത്ഥഗന്ധോൽക്കടം നാനാഖ്യാനകേസരം ഹരികഥാ സംബോധനാബോധിതം ലോകേ സജ്ജന ശൽപദൈരഹരഃ പ്രേവീയമാനം മുദാ ഭാരതഭംഗജ കലിമല പ്രധ്വംസിന ശ്രേയസേ മൂകം കരോതി വാചാലം ലംഘയതേ ഗിരിം യൽക്കവാദമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം യം ബ്രഹ്മാ വരുണേന്ദ്ര രുദ്രമരുതസ്ത്വന്വന്തി ദിവ്യൈസ്തവൈർ വേദൈർ സാന്ദവദേർ ക്രമോപനിഷദേർ ഗായന്തി യം സമഗാഃ ധ്യാനാവസ്ഥിത തദ്ഗതേന മനസാ പശ്യന്തി യം യോഗിനോ യസ്യാന്തം ന വിദുസുരാ അസുരഗണൈ ദേവായ തസ്മൈ നമഃ So So last time we had stopped Bhagavad Gita, the 16th chapter, on the I think 11th, 12th, 13th verses. That's what we were discussing. Krishna says in this chapter, as we know, it is that the divine and the demonic nature, isn't it? Daivam Asuram Sambad Vibhaga Yogam, it says. Daivam Asuram, two kinds of people Krishna talks about. In the very beginning, Krishna mentions this, that this division, Daivam Asuram, is based on our Subhavam, what is based on our Subhavam. And this Subhavam can change. We all have divine nature, we all have demonic nature as well, according to our Vasana, what we have created in several lifetimes. That follows us through all the way. So, important thing is, Krishna mentions here in that 11th verse, ചിന്തം അപരിമേയം ച പ്രളയാന്തം ഉപാശ്രിതാഹ കാമോപഭോഗപരമ ഏതാവതിതി നിശ്ചിത. വൈൽ ടോക്കിംഗ് അബൌട്ട് ദാറ്റ് വി സോ ദി ഡിവൈൻ നേച്ചർ ഫസ്റ്റ്, കൃഷ്ണ സ്പോക്ക് അബൌട്ട് ദി ഡിവൈൻ നേച്ചർ. ആഫ്റ്റർവേർഡ്സ് കൃഷ്ണ വാണ്ടഡ് ടു ടോക്ക് അബൌട്ട് ദി ഡിമോണിക് നേച്ചർ ഇൻ എ വെരി സമറൈസ്ഡ് ഫോം. But Arjuna's question was that the demoniac nature, Arjuna wanted to understand that, to separate it from the divine nature. Arjuna had this doubt in his mind, who am I? Am I a divine person or am I a demoniac person? In order to remove that doubt from Arjuna's mind, Krishna spoke about this demoniac nature in detail. Otherwise, there was no need to talk about it. But the main reason was Arjuna had this doubt in his mind about himself. Am I a divine person or a demoniac person? Because many things what spoken in the divine nature, you can observe yourself that it's rarely seen in the people. Isn't it? Abhaya Sattva Samshuddhi, Jnana Yoga Vivasthiti, those verses if you look at. So, coming to this verse, Krishna started discussing this, then I think it is on the 7th verse. Krishna started talking about the demonic nature. Pravartinja nivartinja janana vidurasura na shaujam na abhijajayo asatyam ajaro na satyam teshu vidyade asatyam apradishtande jagad ahuranishwaram avaraspara sambodham kimanir kamahedugam. Krishna says, Edam drishtvam avastabhya nashtalmano alpabuddhaya prabhavandi ugrakarmanam kshayayam jagadohida. Many things which we have discussed before in the previous classes about that demoniac nature. It is after that Krishna mentioned kamam ashartya dushpuram dambhamanam adanyuda mohad grihitvad asad grahan pravartande ashuchi pradaha. All that we have seen. Then, chindau abhirimayam cha pralayanda upashyada kamobha bhoga parama etavadidhi nishchida. So, why this chapter is important is that Krishna explains in the Bhagavatam also, if you look, you will see, Shuga Brahmarshi, when discussing in the 5th canto, if you look at it, you will see carefully, that Jadabharata met Rahugana. And Rahugana and Jadabharata had a conversation. Jadabharata had 3 lifetimes to spend here. As king, Emperor Bharata, then as the deer, and then later on as the Jadabharata, as Bharata Yogeshwara. As he comes and then he gave up his body once for all and went back to the spiritual world. But in that conversation, after the discussion between Jadabharata and Rahugana, Parikshit Maharaj was very unhappy after that discussion. You can see, if you read in the Bhagavatam carefully, you will see these things. Parikshit Maharaj felt that a great personality like Bharata, Emperor Bharat, who had such a great attachment to Krishna and who spent a considerable time in serving Krishna, finally ended up like this. Had to come back for 3 lifetimes. And here I am, Parikshit says to Shuga Brahmarshi, here I am, I've gone and done something extremely bad by throwing that dead snake on the Rishi's neck. And I am sitting here, what will be my fate? This was disturbing his mind. Who? Parikshit's mind. Parikshit saw this, that on the one hand, Parikshit had noticed this, that Jadabharata, who was an emperor, Krishabhadev's son, isn't it, eldest son, and who had not committed any sinful things, no seriously sinful activities he has done. A perfect life. If you look at the Bhagavatam, you will see there, Shuka Brahmarshi calls him Mahabhagavatam, about who? Bharata. That is that chapter, if you look at the Bhagavatam, you will see, if Shuga Brahmarshi has to call someone as Mahabhagavatam, he has to be somebody great. Otherwise, he wouldn't say that, is it not? If you look into Bhagavatam, you will see there in the 5th canto, in the that chapter begins like this, 7th chapter. Shri Shuka Vacham, Bharadastu Mahabhagavato, Yada Bhagavada Avanidala Paripalanaya. That is how he begins the chapter. That Bharata as Mahabhagavatam, and that is repeated again and again in the next few chapters about his position as Mahabhagavatam. Such a great personality like Jadabharata, if he had to come back again as a deer body and again as Jadabharata,
what will be my situation? This started disturbing Parikshit's mind. You will observe this if you read through Bhagavatam carefully.
Bharadastu Mahabhagavado Yada Bhagavadan Avani Narabaripalanayam Sanjindidastad Anushasanabaram Panjajanim Visharubam Uhidara Ubayeme. Then Yasya Mahava Altmajan Karsniena Anirubana Altmana Panjajanayama Sabodadi Iva Bodha Sushmani.
So if you, from that seventh chapter, Parikshit Maharaj's anxiety built up about the situation, what is going to happen to me? This thought came up in Parikshit's mind. Parikshit started wondering, if a personality like Bharata, if he had to accept three lifetimes, what will be my situation? This started worrying him. And when he started worrying like that, Sugambrahmarshi says to Parikshit, there is no need to worry. There is no need to worry about it. Because Sugambrahmarshi is seeing it from a different level. He is saying to Parikshit, I know you because who has protected you? Krishna entered into the womb of Uttara Devi and protected you in that situation. And if you had to be protected in that way, Krishna has definitely shown some compassion to you and accepted you. Otherwise, it would not have happened. Parikshit was little bit satisfied with that answer. Again, you will see in the same chapter later on, Parikshit Maharaj being addressed as Uttara Taneya, Uttara's son. In other words, Uttara's good qualities has protected Parikshit, not Parikshit on his own. It is mother's quality that has protected that child. Earlier, Parikshit was protected because of the mother. So, Uttara Devi protected Parikshit. And Parikshit was feeling the anxiety, what is going to happen to him. It was at that time, this Jadabharata's chapter, which is later on with his discussion with Rahugana, happened. And Jadabharata spoke to Rahugana so many things. There is a very small chapter, but it is one of the most heavy chapter in the Bhagavatam, which if you look, you will see there in the fifth canto. That is that Bharata Rahugana Sambhadam. It is called the discussion between Bharata and Rahugana. That is the 11th chapter. There is only 17 verses in that. But if you have to explain those 17 verses, it is particularly very, very difficult because you require so many commentaries from the other commentators to understand that chapter properly, to understand it properly. That is the such one of the most heavy chapters in the Bhagavatam is that chapter, the 11th chapter of the 5th canto. 11th chapter of the 5th canto. It is in that chapter that Rahugana, who was an ordinary king, has got self-realized in that chapter. Just by hearing those 17 verses. Just like at the end of the Bhagavatam, how you see in the 5th chapter of the 12th canto, how Parikshit realized the truth. Exactly the same way, you can see in that chapter, after hearing from Jadabharata, Rahugana realizes the truth. Rahugana's self-realization comes in the next chapter, the answer. It is very much identical to the way Parikshit and Sugambrahmarshi. What Sugambrahmarshi spoke, and when Parikshit realized, and how he spoke back to him about his realization. In the same way, you will observe that if you study those two chapters. 11th chapter is the Upadesham, instructions to Rahugana from Jadabharata. And the 12th chapter is recognition of that realization by Rahugana in reply to Jadabharata. But to understand that chapter requires a lot of explanations. It's such a detailed, although few verses, but the depth of philosophy and understanding of the principles of Krishna consciousness, how Jadabharata spoke to Rahugana, comes through those two chapters. After that, you will see that there is one chapter where Jadabharata spoke to the nature of the material life. We probably translated this the forest of enjoyment, isn't it? 14th chapter. Actually, 13th chapter and 14th chapter is one and the same. 13th chapter was spoken in a very subtle level. But Parikshit could not understand, so it has to be expanded and spoken, and that is the 14th chapter. 13th chapter was spoken in a like the Puranjana story, like a story in that way it was spoken in a very subtle way. But Raja, you can see there, the king says, I could not understand what you are saying, he says. He says, I could not understand what you are saying. So it is at that time, to explain that chapter, it was spoken in detail in the 14th chapter. In that 14th chapter is as important as this chapter what we are studying in the Bhagavad Gita. Why? Reason is this. That why these chapters are important is that Vairagyam does not come very easily in this life. Vairagyam does not come very easily. People start reading, when they take Bhagavatam, they start reading Gopika Gitam, Krishna's appearance and all that. They think that by reading that chapter they make the progress. Actually it is not. First thing what you have to read is this chapter. Every day, which one? This 14th chapter of the fifth canto. Not Gopika Gitam, not Krishna's appearance. Because to understand Gopika Gitam, to understand Krishna's appearance, first of all, you have to have that desire to serve Krishna. In order to that to build up inside, Vairagyam has to come first. Without Vairagyam, anything you may do in spiritual life, it is not going to fructify. It is because of that, that what you find here is that many, many great scholars of Bhagavatam, they tell the people that first you read this chapter, which one? This 14th chapter of the fifth canto, on a daily basis. By reading that chapter, you experience the understanding of the importance, so that it is in order to develop that detachment from the material life, material existence. Krishna has spoken this chapter, and in the Bhagavatam what you will see there is that this particular chapter, one who reads that 14th chapter will give us that understanding that the futility of the material existence. And in the same way, this chapter here also is spoken. That is how we have to understand this chapter. I'll repeat that again. That the, in order that to prepare a person to accept what Krishna is explaining to us in the Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam, Shubha Brahmarshi, knowing our way of thinking, first of all, to create that detachment in the mind, he has spoken certain chapters in the Bhagavatam, and Krishna has spoken this chapter in the Bhagavad Gita to open up our eyes, to see the truth properly, what we are and what is our present situation. It is in that context you have to look at this chapter, Divine and the Demonic Nature. Because so many things are spoken in that chapter in the Bhagavatam also. When you read through those chapters, probably you will get the impression that it is a very, very powerful chapter. Everyone who has read that chapter, they understand that the 14th chapter in the 5th canto is spoken, and it is sometimes a little bit disturbing also. A little bit disturbing also, that chapter. But most of us, because we don't understand that chapter, we don't get disturbed. This is how it is. Because we don't understand that chapter, we don't get disturbed about it. But what is important there is, the way Shubha Brahmarshi has spoken these things, all our weaknesses in this life, when we live in this world, and Shubha Brahmarshi, he lives in the forest. How did he know about us so well? This question you will start asking when you read that chapter. The way he presented about the life in this world, what we are living, how we live in this world, our dealings with each other, our tendencies to exploit others, to cheat others, all sorts of things, what we have. A person like Sukadeva Goswami, who lives in the forest, was able to present it so well in the Bhagavatam, and you will wonder how this has happened. How could he do this in such a way? And so many things will come out from that chapter. Anyway, this important thing is, this 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, what Krishna has spoken, is it is only for one reason only, to open up our eyes and to see what's going on around us. So, it was in that situation we discussed last time that the without knowing our own identity, who we are conducting all the business in this world, isn't it? We don't know who we are. We are still thinking we are this body, identifying with the body. And with this false identification and avidya inside, the ignorance inside us, we still do act as though we know everything in this world, what goes on. And we are so fixed in our business here. What Krishna is trying to tell us here is that avidya, which is so deep-rooted inside, till that goes away from us, whatever we do in this, it's all done with the basis of avidya. Aparavidya, avidya. That is it. Aparavidya it is. It is avidya. So, therefore, coming out of the body and coming back to consciousness is not an easy thing. It's not an easy thing. So, awareness, or Krishna calls it as bodham, avabodham. That avabodham or awareness is the important factor first. And till that, we have come out of the body to that extent, anything what is spoken in spiritual life is simply superficial. It remains on a superficial level. That is why even so many anartham or inauspicious things happens in life, even at that point, when we do not know our identity, who is doing this, who is behind it, even while chanting, who is chanting? We don't ask that question. We are chanting, but who is chanting? Even we don't know that. We are thinking identification with the body, identification with the mind, identification with the intelligence and so many things. But what is the force that is behind, which is motivating this to engage in a particular activity? And that is why you will see this, that in the Upanishads, while they talk about this, in the first thing itself, they say that if you open your eyes, who is looking through the eye? Who is hearing through the ears? And who is telling you for the mind to go out and inquire in the world? All these questions are asked in the Upanishads in the beginning itself. That's why you will find there that the Upanishad says there, in the Kenobanishad, the first verse itself is this question. It mentions there that that Keneshidam Vajamimam Vadandi Chatushrotram Ka O Devo Yunakti Om Keneshidam Pasadi Preshidamana Kena Prana Prathama Praibi Yuktaha Keneshida Vajamimam Vadandi Chatushrotram Ka O Devo Yunakti. Upanishad begins with this verse. If you don't ask this question, what are we inquiring after? First of all, we have to know what we are inquiring after. So the rishis who knew these things well, they begin like this, that first of all, who is looking through the eyes? Who is looking through the, who is hearing through the ears? Who is tasting through the tongue? Who is speaking through the tongue? And who, under whose instructions, the mind takes interest in the world outside? These questions were first put forth in the Upanishad. So, Om Keneshidam Padadi Preshidam Manaha Kena Prana Pradama Previ Yuktaha Keneshidam Vajamimam Vadandi Chakshu Shrotram Ka U Devo Yunakti, says Keno Upanishad. Keno Upanishad begins with this verse. So, And similarly, at the time in the deep sleep state or during night time, we dream also. And who is watching, who is seeing the dream? Who is seeing the dream? And where is that light coming from in the dream state? Where is the light coming from the dream state? So Upanishads talks about these things, more given more importance to these things. They gave more importance to these things. Reason is that before we begin the self-inquiry, the self-inquiry has to come from some source. And what is that source? This is what is being pointing at. So you can see in the Upanishads, in the Kathopanishad also, that is how they have spoken, and they say that ya eshu supteshu, while in the supnam state, jagarti, or in the vacant state, kamam purusho nirmimanaha tadeva shukram tadbrahmam tadevam amritamuchyate tasmin lokashrita sarve tadu natyogi kaschana edadvai tad. When Nachiketa asked Yama about transcendental knowledge, about self-realization, Nachiketa was told by Yama that initially Yama refused to answer that question. He kept him waiting for a few days before he started discussing to find out whether he was serious about the inquiry. Finally, when he opened up, he mentions there that esha supteshu jagarti, in dream state and in the vacant state, who is present there? Find out who that is, he said. Kamam purusho nirmimanaha, and who keeps on creating new plans in his mind, designs in his mind, and who is known as tadeva shukram tad brahmam. Rishis are 100% sure he is Brahmam. Brahmam is his identity. Aham Brahmasmi. That is the way rishis see us. They don't look at the body. They look at that power, that force or consciousness, what is present in every living being. And Nachiketas was told, Yama says to him, there is no more to inquire further. If you know who that is, tadeva shukram tad brahmam, that is the truth. There is no more to inquire further after from that. So while sleeping and while being awake also, and also in the sleep you are dreaming. You are dreaming also. And rishis are saying to us, there is nothing more amazing than this in the whole creation. For us it's not nothing surprising, isn't it? We take it very easily. We think, what is there to talk about it? We think about our vacant state, dream state and the deep sleep. But the rishi says to us that this is the most amazing thing. Which one? In the dream state, who is dreaming? In the vacant state, who is coming out and looking at the world? And who is coming out and hearing different things? And who comes out through the mind and deal with the world? Who is doing that? This is the rishi's question. And they also say that if you look at this process, what is going on inside all of us, that is the most amazing thing in the creation, as far as the rishis are concerned. You see how the self-inquiry goes. Self-inquiry is this. It is not the inquiry about the world. It's not the inquiry about the world. It's the inquiry about yourself. It's inquiry about yourself. As long as we haven't conducted that inquiry, Krishna is saying to us that there is not much difference from the animals and us. We are practically no difference than that. You may do anything in this world, but at the end, if you do not know who you are, what is importance then? What is the meaning? What does it mean? That's why they say here that the where did you get that? When you were dreaming, you are seeing everything. So where is that light coming from? Where is that light coming from? And and when you have observed that,
after a while, even without that dream, you go back to a deep sleep state.
Deep sleep state. And that experience there, in that deep sleep state, you haven't got your body, you haven't got your mind. Both of them have gone away. You don't have a dream either. Body has gone, mind is gone. So all the activities is gone and the dream state is also gone. So Krishna says here, it is that state, and Upanishads also mentions the same thing. Na kanchana kamam yatra supto na kanchana kamam kamayate na kanchana supnam pashyati tadaha sushuptam sushuptasthanam eki bodaha pratyanaghanam evam anandamayam anandabhukchedo mukha prajna sprudiya padaha esha sarveshwaraha esha sarvajnaha esha andariyami yonihi sarvasya prabhavapayohi bhutanam. So in that state, when we talk about that deep sleep state, Upanishad says that state is anandabhukha. Anandabhukha means there is only anandam there. Anandam there. In other words, you haven't seen anything in the deep sleep state. You haven't heard anything in the deep sleep state. You haven't enjoyed any of your senses at that time. And your mind was not absorbed in anything. And still you experience that happiness of the deep sleep state. And not only that, at that time, you were not a man or a woman in that deep sleep, isn't it? Nothing there, neither man nor woman in the deep sleep. But when you woke up, you are saying that I had a good sleep. I had a good sleep. This is the most interesting aspect of that. So, without being in contact with the world and without being mind being active, still some happiness what you have experienced in that deep sleep trip. And that is not an ordinary sleep, isn't it? That's not an ordinary experience in this world when we come out of that. So that is why everybody likes that deep sleep state. Everybody likes that deep sleep state. And actually, this happiness what you have experienced in the deep sleep is not coming from the sleep. That is the most important thing to know. We all misunderstand it. That is how, look at the avidya inside us, how it interprets it. When we wake up, we say, what do we say? We say, I had a good sleep. And what do we say? The sleep was so good that I feel better. Actually, you feel better not because of the deep sleep. This is the important point. Rishis are saying to us that it is not due to your sleep that you are feeling better when you wake up in the morning. Because you had no contact with the matter. No contact with the body. No contact with any of the senses. No contact with the world. And that is why you are happy. This is the important point to realize first. Because we keep saying this to everybody, isn't it? Everybody says this. Oh, I had such a good sleep. We say like this. And we say to others, because I had such a good sleep, I got such a good sleep, that's why I feel refreshed. No, it's not due to good sleep that you got the refreshment. The refreshing nature is not due to the sleep, it is due to the breaking away from the matter. Breaking away from the matter. When you are broken up from the body, broken away from the, separated from the body, separated from the mind, separated from everything, intelligence, ego, including the very ego, what you identify with, and with the world outside, you feel this natural way. This is why Mandukyam says that. Mandukya Upanishad particularly mentions that. Esha Sarveshwaraha. What is present there is Sarveshwara, Krishna. Krishna who is present there. That's what it says like that. That's why Upanishads, when they talk about it, they'll mention it like this. That Esha Sarveshwaraha, Esha Sarvajnaha, Esha Andayami Esha Yoni, Sarvasya Prabhavapayohi Bhutanam, and Anandabhu Cheto Mukha. And that Anandam or happiness, that bliss, what you have experienced when you woke up from the deep sleep, is Krishna. That Anandam what you experienced is Krishna. This is how Upanishads puts it to us. So, we have seen that, and we also mentions there that this statement in the Upanishads, they haven't got any doubt about it. So that experience at that time, what we had, is coming from the Antaryami, Krishna inside Antaryami. So when the mind dissolves in the deep sleep, that is where the mind goes and dissolves in the Antaryami, and that is why we feel that happiness. And what is interesting there is, if anybody had a deep sleep in this world, no matter who it is, whether it is Indian or American or European or African, no matter who it is, when the experience they had in the deep sleep is exactly the same for everybody, isn't it? It doesn't vary. Have you seen anyone saying, my deep sleep was better than your deep sleep? No. In the deep sleep state, when you come out, your experience in the deep sleep is exactly the same anyone else in this world. Because we are now discussing about this deep sleep state. That's what you're trying to. So in that, the problem is, in that deep sleep state, you can't analyze the self. That is a difficulty, isn't it? In the deep sleep state, you can't analyze the self, because because there is no thoughts there. Thought waves are not there in the deep sleep state. So therefore, only thing you can do is, only in your wakened state you can do this self-analysis or inquiry about the self. You can do it only in the wakened state. And therefore, Krishna says here, in the deep sleep state, although your experience is that bliss, unfortunately, one problem that is it, that the ignorance that is in us is also present there, in that deep sleep state. And also, and there is no person there in that deep sleep state, only experience there, is it not? Only experience there. If you know these things, only then, if you understand this well, only then you can study that chapter what Jadabharata and Brahugana has discussed. Otherwise, you won't understand it. Let me tell you that very clearly. If you want to understand Jadabharata and Brahugana's discussions, you have to know these things in depth. Because what he did was, when Jadabharata spoke to Brahugana, he put it in a few words to him. And Brahugana, only due to, of course, there is a reason behind it, why he spoke in a very calculated way, with very few words, he put everything to him. Brahugana got the message, and when he got the message, Jadabharata did not speak one word to him after that. He walked out from there. Exactly like the way Shukha Brahmarshi spoke, left. Can you imagine, after had a discussion with Jadabharata and Brahugana, Jadabharata leaves him once he understood that Brahugana has got it, what he wanted him to get. What was that? The truth. Knowledge of the self. When Brahugana experienced the self, Jadabharata did not say one word, walked away from there. That is the most interesting part of the Bhagavatam. Exactly the same way, Shukha Brahmarshi, when he spoke Srimad Bhagavatam for 7 days, and when Parikshit realized, he did not speak one word to him while leaving. He left and walked away from there. This is self-realization. In the realized state, you see, all our so-called social etiquette is in our conditioned state. We give too much importance to all these things, isn't it? And that itself shows how deep the ajnanam is inside. Social etiquette is coming from our ajnanam, avidya. Avidya inside, just like if you don't say goodbye to somebody, they get upset. Is it not? How long you have to say this goodbye? We give importance to all these things, is it not? That is why when you start looking Bhagavatam, looking into the transcendental personalities, their dealings with each other. When Rishabhadev was living in this world, people threw stones at him. They threw stones at him. And on Jadabharata, they have done so many things to him. All these great souls, they look at us, seeing our so-called social etiquette and all other things, what we have created in this world. they have no connection with any of these things. This is our avidya dealings, it is. Ajnanam dealings or avidya transactions, you can call it. In avidya, what we do, that is what we are, our modern world or the normal social interactions, in other words. But in the Bhagavatam, what you find is that when Jadabharata had spoken to Rahugana and Rahugana realized the truth, Jadabharata walks away from there, not saying any more further. What was the reason? Reason is this, that Jadabharata wanted Rahugana to come to his state. What was Jadabharata's state? That you will see in that discussion. What was the discussion? Rahugana as a king tells him, you know that I am the king, he said. You know I can punish you. And he says to him so many things in the Bhagavatam. If you look, you will see that, oh, are you thin? Are you so thin that you can't carry this palanquin? And he questioned Jadabharata, the king Rahugana questioned Jadabharata. How did Jadabharata answer? Jadabharata says to him, I am not fat, I don't know whether I am fat or thin, he says. I don't know, I am fat or thin. I don't know, I am walking or I am staying in one place. He says to him, Rahugana, I have disconnected with this body long ago. This was Jadabharata's reply to Rahugana. I have disconnected with the body long ago. And you are talking to me as though I am the body. Is it not? So who is at fault, me or you? This was the question. And when Rahugana got it, that realization, he realized it that how stupid he was to talk to him in that way. That you will see in the Bhagavatam when you look at those verses later. But important point is that as long as we are in that state of avidya, ajnanam, whatever we hear, whether it is Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita, with that identification with the body and the mind, anything what we accept will not go into the right place. It will not work. It will not work. That is why again and again we have to keep hearing Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita because of this reason. Till we get it. Otherwise all this doesn't mean anything. That is why Krishna says here also that where is our ignorance? Ignorance is in the intelligence. It's not in the self. Self doesn't have any ignorance. Self is perfect. That is the statement of the Bhagavad Gita. Rishis are telling us the self is perfect, Atma is perfect. But, and this ajnanam, avidya, what we talk about is in our intelligence. So actually our identity is perfection. Our identity is perfection. And anandam or bliss, that is our nature, shandi, isn't it? But impurities is not our nature. Where is the impurity then? Impurity is in the mind, in the intelligence, isn't it? So when we see that purity inside ourselves, within ourselves, no imperfections inside, and what Krishna mentioned in the before, that fearlessness, remember, which abhayam, that abhayam, fearlessness, and ashokam, that no lamentation inside. When we start experiencing this inside, that is why Krishna is talking about this demoniac nature here. If you look into the 6th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna mentions there in a different way. How subtle Bhagavad Gita is, you can see when you study these chapters. In the 6th chapter, Krishna says there, in the 28th verse, he says, Yunjam evam sadalpanam yogi vigatakalmashaha sukhena brahma samsparsham atyandam sukham asnute. That verse. Yunjam evam sadalpanam yogi vigatakalmashaha sukhena brahma samsparsham atyandam sukham asnute. The self-controlled yogi, constantly engaged in yoga practice, becomes free from all material contamination and achieves the highest stage of perfect happiness in transcendental loving service to the Lord. So, when Krishna has spoken these verses, what is important is to know who
Krishna is talking to, the person who is in that state will understand what Krishna is saying. Otherwise, we won't understand that. We will read it and we will think that it is a state where we are today. In this present state, it's not possible to experience that. That's the point Krishna is pointing out there. So that is why, by getting that, and after that, no matter what distress, because if you look at the verses following that, this sixth chapter is so important that Krishna mentioned there that yam ladhva chabaram labham manyade nadhigam tada tasmin sthidoina dukhena guru nabhi vijayalyade tam vidya dukkha samyogam vyogam yogasam idam. So many beautiful verses. Krishna is saying, stressing the importance of all this self-realization. Without realization, Krishna is saying to us that this experience, that what he spoke about here, sughena brahma samsparsham, isn't it? In that brahma samsparsham means that when you have realized that state, that happiness what you are experiencing, in that state, even if great distress comes, it cannot touch you. Why? Because you have moved away from the body. Moved away from the body. That is the important factor there. If you don't understand the background of this, these verses will be simply on the superficial level. Krishna is pointing out certain very deeper level. He is telling us that the after reaching this Sukhena Brahma Samsparsham, whatever great distress comes in life, it cannot touch you. That's the point Krishna is making there. It cannot touch you because tam vidya dukkha samyogam viyogam yogasam idam. That dukkha samyoga viyogam has gone. Coming from samyoga has gone. So, what is thing is that distress is one thing in life. It will come uninvited. You don't have to invite distress. Isn't it? Those who know what is distress means in life, it keeps coming. And it is the only one uninvited guest when it comes in life, isn't it? And he doesn't send you an email or a phone call, but he comes when he wants to come. And it all kinds of trouble. So that is why many spiritually advanced personalities, they say this, that before you cut the jackfruit, you cover your hands with the oil for this reason. The jackfruit has got that sticky thing in there. So if you don't want to have your hands stuck with that stuff in the jackfruit, you normally, what they do before they cut the fruit, they massage the whole hand with oil so that it doesn't stick, that sticky thing in the fruit. So similarly, Krishna is saying here also that before that distress comes, you must get in touch with, there is a center inside which cannot be touched by the distress. And that is the self. That is the self. And once you have touched that, then it is not the center what we talk about as the ego. It is not that ego what Krishna is referring to. Rather, Krishna is referring to the real self, real I. So that process, what the jnanis talk about, to inquire about that real self, first you have to find out the ego. Every time the inquiry about the ego. And at that time, and when you trace the ego, you will see that it vanishes and it comes to the perfection of the pure self inside. So many things in the Jnana Margam they refer to as Bhumigas they call it. Bhumiga Labdhi they mentions like that. So till that release happens from the identification with the body, with the mind, and with the separation from the body and the mind and the intelligence and the ego, this experience, what Krishna has spoken, is difficult to understand. It's difficult to understand. Because whether it is Srimad Bhagavatam, whether it is Bhagavad Gita, or whether it is Upanishads, you can keep it closed and say this, that
that when you open up, Krishna talks about demons, isn't it? Now we are talking about the demoniac nature. So this demoniac nature and its symptoms, what Krishna has spoken here in the Bhagavad Gita, all the Shastram also, that he is saying this demoniac nature, where is the demoniac nature? That is the question we have to ask, is it not? Where is this demoniac nature? That is why, if you look into Srimad Bhagavatam, you will see that when Sri Narada Maharshi is discussing in the fourth canto, if you look, you will see how everything is linked up very well in the Bhagavad Gita and the Bhagavatam. If you look into the fourth canto, in the 22nd chapter, there is a verse there which says that Sanal Kumara Maharshi discussing with Prithu. Prithu Maharaj and Sanal Kumara Maharshi. Prithu Maharaj is Krishna's incarnations, isn't it? One of the incarnations. And that Prithu had a discussion with the four Kumaras. Particularly Sanal Kumara Maharshi comes to instruct him about the transcendental knowledge. He mentions there, Shastreshu Yaneva, that is the 21st verse. Shastreshu 4, 22, 21. Shastreshu Yaneva Sunishchido Nranam Kshema Sesadrak Vimrsheshu Hetu Asangam Alpa Vyadiriktam Alpani Dridaradir Brahmani Nirgune Chayam. That is that verse. When the, you can see how the rishis talk with such gravity and such depth, completely fixed in the transcendental state. We can't even dream about that. That is their state of the way they talk to Prithu. Sanat Kumara Maharshi is saying to him, Shastreshu Yaneva Sunishchido Nranam Kshemasya Sadrak Vimrsheshu Hedu Asangam Atma Vyadiriktam Atmani Dridaradar Brahmani Nirgunechaya. Nirgunechaya, that fourth canto. He mentions like that. That, what is that? He says here, what is the essence? He says that Analtma Vastu means wherever it has not connected with the self, that means gross body, mind, intelligence, ego. We live in these things, is it not? Bodily level, mental platform, intellectual platform, sensual platform. This is our existence normally in this world. Till we stop this activity in these fields, body activity, mental activity, intellectual activity, and sensual activities, and Almaredi, and come to the platform of the soul, and this thing called Anandam will never be experienced. Will never be experienced. That is what that verse is. Shastreshu Yanyeshu Sunishchido Nranam. Sanat Kumara Maharshi is saying this to Prithu. Sanat Kumara Maharshi is saying this to Prithu. There is no Anandam, otherwise it is not possible. That is what in the Upanishad is meant. Altma Kredanaha. Atma Kridanaha, Atma Mithunaha. Because only in the spiritual existence there is happiness. Anandam is only in the spiritual existence. And anything that has come out in the world and mind trying to acquire happiness from this world, you won't get it. You won't get it. When they say happiness, the happiness, sukham, what is addressed as sensual happiness or happiness in the mind, which you can easily understand. That happiness, what we call in this world, is our mental happiness it is. It is a mental mind that is calling, experiencing that. It has nothing to do with the self. That is why when Krishna is always addressed as Anandam, isn't it? Sachidanandam. Anandam is Krishna's another definition. He is referred to as Anandam. Ananda Rupam Bhagavan Ai Devadare. The Ananda Rupam. Anandam is Krishna's form, Sachidanandam. So, so Krishna's appearance itself is to show to us that every appearance when Krishna comes, is in order to indicate to us that our identity is also Anandam, like Krishna's. Krishna's identity is Anandam, isn't it? Satchidanandam we say, Satchita Anandam it is. We don't say Satchita Sukham, it is Satchita Anandam it is. Our identity also in the same way it is Anandam, and that is the point Krishna is pointing out here. And that Anandam is the nature of Atma, of the soul. And so Anandam is in everybody, but what is preventing that Anandam coming out is the Ajnanam, Avidya inside. So there is nothing to be given up actually, but what it is that realizing this Anandam, what is present in every one of us, that is not available anywhere else, it is right inside each one of us, that is where it has to be found. And that is why Krishna says here, what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, it's all supported by the Upanishads. Upanishads mentions there, also if you look into the Kena Upanishad, it says there, that if this enquiry has not happened here in this life, in this very body, he says, Iha cheda vedi, daya satyamasti, na chediha vedim mahandi vinashti, bodeshu bodeshu vijindya dhiraha, pratyasma logad amrda bhavandi, idi Kena Upanishad dvitiya khandam. Kena Upanishad says here, that Iha cheda vediya satyamasti, if you realize this here now, in this world, before you leave this body, there will be truth in that. There is truth. You can get it right here. Then there is truth. Upanishad puts, if you build up some idea that after death something will happen, that is, Upanishads don't agree with that. Upanishads are saying to us, Iha cheda vedi atha satyam asti. This satyam, that truth, it has to be got here right now in this world before we. Na chediha vedam. Na chediha vedin mahadi vinashti. If it has not happened in this life here, you have lost a big thing. A great loss has happened. Why? Bodeshu vichitya dhiraha pratyasma logad amrda bhavandi. The wise one, the intelligent one, that they know very well that if it is not realized here, then you have lost a great opportunity, great destruction after that. What will happen after death? Who knows? Who knows what will happen? Who can give you a guarantee that after death, that this is what's going to happen to you? Nobody can give any guarantee. That is why Upanishad says to us, if it has to happen, it has to happen now here, before you leave this body. Iha cheda vedidam satyam asti na chediha vedim mahadi vinashti bodeshu bodeshu vijindya dhiraha. Because they say that when he leaves this world, after he has realized this truth, he becomes immortal. All beings, and having turned away from this world, he becomes immortal. This is how the Kena Upanishad talks about that. So if it is realized here, it is a truth. But Krishna's Vedam says to us that if you have not realized it here, it's a great loss. Mahadi Vinashti. Not to lose this chance. And that is why Upanishads, particularly the Rishis, they say to us that this is the greatest opportunity to realize this human form. It's the greatest opportunity for realizing the truth. And they have given us Bhagavad Gita, Upanishads, Bhagavatam, and great literature. And all those literature has only one thing to tell us. They are always telling us that we are perfect. We are not imperfect. And Krishna is inside. Krishna is inside and realize that. So, whatever circus or whatever we do outside, till we realize that presence of the soul, presence of Atma, presence of Krishna inside, that we will never become perfect. Till we know that, isn't it? That is why Upanishad puts it in different ways. In different Upanishads, it's spoken in a different way. Mentions there also that the that they give this example, yatheshu akasham tad yada charmavati akasham. Yada charmavati akasham, it says that the Rishi's way of speaking, yada charmavati akasham veshta ishyanti manavaha tada devam avijnaya dukkhasyanti bhavishyati. Suppose you are able to fold the sky like you scroll a mat. Mats you sleep, you scroll them in the morning when you finish sleeping and put it in one corner, isn't it? Similarly, if you can scroll down the whole, the sky, even then it is useless, they say. Even if you, because it's one of the most difficult things, one cannot do that. So therefore, Upanishad says, even if you can do that, still it is not good enough till you realize the self. Till you realize the self. Vyashtayishyanti manavaha. So, that means that the self-realization is such a thing that after you realize the truth, it is perfection there. It is perfection there. So, it is because of that happiness or perfection that is within everybody and which is perfect. Because of its presence inside, that is why we are inquiring for that outside in the world. In everyone, there is a desire to become happy, isn't it? Where is that desire coming from? It is because of the presence of that anandam inside. That anandam inside is indicating to us there is a thing called happiness. But because we do not know how to get it and where to get it, we keep on looking for it in the world in different ways. In different ways we are trying to find out that. So, but important why that is spoken here is that one who has realized that the source of happiness is inside, Krishna is saying here, in that person, this divine nature will develop. You see, we are thinking, oh, I will develop this nature, divine nature, or I will develop a demoniac nature. Normally what people do is, once they have read this chapter, they look at others and put them into different, oh, he is a demon, he is a devotee, he is a demon, he is a devotee, we class. That is not what Krishna is talking about. What Krishna is saying to us is, Krishna had only one intention to tell us about the divine nature. Krishna is not like us, that he has to be, I think Krishna has come down a long way down to talk to us already. I think there is a limit he can come down to also. Because we are so gross, we just cannot understand where Krishna is coming from. This statement is coming from. Krishna is saying to us that the very nature of the divine nature, which is our real nature in everyone, but that divine nature is not manifesting. That he has explained that before, why it's not manifesting in us, the divine nature, isn't it? Divine nature is not manifesting in us, Krishna says that. But the demonic nature is present in us. And divine nature does not manifest for one reason only, because of the avidya. Avidya, simple as that, avidya. In the fourth chapter, Krishna very categorically says that what you have got at the moment is simply avidya, ajnanam or avidya, isn't it? He mentions in straight verse after verse in the fourth chapter, avidya. So, till that avidya goes away, Krishna is pointing out to us, it is never going to change. This avidya and the demonic nature are together. Avidya and the demonic nature are together. And similarly, Krishna says here, the divine nature will come in a person stage by stage, that because the source of that divine nature is inside, not outside. Source of that divine nature is inside, not outside. So, how far we recognize that, it depends on that, our demonic nature. The more we recognize the presence of divine nature inside, we will be less demoniac. It is so subtle, that is, this subject, that till we understand that the demonic nature and the divine nature is not outside, it is inside. And the more we understand that, the divine nature comes from the self, from Atma, because that is the source of everything, isn't it? Atma is the source of everything. From Atma comes our divine nature. Atma comes the divine nature. Demonic nature is the vasanas that we have picked up from the world. They are coming from two different sources. Divine nature comes from the self. Demonic nature comes from our vasanas, what we have collected from the world. Divine nature comes from the self. Demonic nature comes from the vasana. But most of the people don't think like that. They think that, I am a divine person. He is a demoniac. Or somebody else, we brand them as demoniac, because we don't know where this is coming from. That is why. That is the reason why this thing is important to know this. It is in the background of the Upanishads, Krishna is speaking these things to us. That this very nature of divinity comes from the self. If you are Krishna conscious, you will have divine nature in you, the natural way. Demonic nature won't come. If demonic nature is coming out, it means you are not Krishna conscious. That's what it is. That's where it's coming from. Because vasanas are overpowering our demonic nature. This is the reason why Krishna said, you remember in the Bhagavadam, Svabhava Vijayam Shauryam Satyanja Samadarshanam. One amazing statement. You won't see this anywhere else except in the Bhagavadam. Krishna is saying, look at your Svabhavam and I can tell you where you stand, he says. Svabhava Vijayam Shauryam. If your Svabhavam, if you manage to change that, you have done the greatest conquering in the world. Changing one's own Svabhavam. That is the most difficult thing. Svabhava Vijayam Shauryam. Heroic person, or the most courageous person, is that person who has managed to change his own Svabhavam. His own Svabhavam. From this you can understand another important thing. If you are feeling that happiness of the self, if you are feeling the happiness of the self, and that happiness, if it is based on divine nature, if it is based on the divine nature, depending on divine nature or the demoniac nature, you will know if your happiness is inside or outside. A person who has happiness inside, he is always in the divine nature. A person who has happiness outside, he is always in the demoniac nature. This is the relationship. A person who has happiness inside, he is in a divine nature. A person who finds happiness in the world outside, he is a demoniac nature. This is the way Krishna puts it to us. That is why so many verses in this, if you look at that, you will see there that that verse, Chindau Aparimeyam Cha Klayantam Upashridaha Kamo Vabhoga Paramaha Edavadidi Nishchidaha Asha Pasha Shadair Baddhaha Kama Krodha Parayanaha Ihande Kama Bhogartham And all of those things are based on the world outside. Chindau aparimeyam cha pralayandam upashridaha kamo bhoga paramaha edavadidi nischidaha ashapasha shaderbaddha kama krodha parayanaha ihande kama bhogartham anyeyenartha sanjayan. Idamadhyam mayalabham, imam prapse manoratham, idam asti idamabhime, bhavishyanti punardhanam, asau mayahada shatrur, hanishecha baranabhi, ishwarohamaham bhogi, siddhoham balavana sukhi, adhyobhijyajnavanasmi, konyosti isadrishomaya yakshedasya mimodishya ityajnana vimohitah. 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, all those verses. So, the subtle side of those verses is this. The subtlety is more important. Don't just go by the what Krishna has spoken there. See the background behind those verses. Krishna is pointing out to us that if your happiness is coming from the self, in from Atma, you are a divine person. If your happiness is coming from the externalities in this world, from the sense gratification, or all those things what is listed there. You can see what Krishna says there. They believe to gratify the senses is the prime necessity of human civilization. Until the end of life, their activity is immeasurable, bound by a network of hundreds and thousands of desires, and absorbed in lust and anger, they secure money by illegal means for sense gratification. Then, demonic person thinks, so much wealth do I have today, and I'll again more gain more according to my schemes. So much is mine now, and it will increase in the future more and more. He is my enemy, and I have killed him, and my other enemies will also be killed. I am the lord of everything. I am the enjoyer. I am perfect, powerful, and happy. I am the richest man, surrounded by aristocratic relatives. There is none so powerful and happy as I am. I shall perform sacrifices, I shall give some charity, and thus I shall rejoice. In this way, such persons are deluded by ignorance. So, important thing here, as we spoke before, as Upanishads, Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam all has to say one thing to us, that if there is no search for the truth, if there is no inquiry after the self, and if that happiness of the Atma or soul or bliss, if it is not experienced, and if you feel happiness in this world still, you have to take it that it's coming from our demonic nature. That is how the rishis have very clearly defined it to us. They put it to us very clearly. Whether to accept it or not, that's our choice. But they have to tell us the truth. They don't make any compromise on that. As far as they are concerned, if there is no happiness coming from the soul, Atma, Atmajnanam, or knowledge of the self, because the real source of happiness is only there, and that is why we talked about the deep sleep state. You can see that happiness, what we experienced in the deep sleep, is only what is called anandam. That is the anandam which comes from the Atma. It does not come from the sleep. That's the first important thing. Most of us, we understand it like that, isn't it? Oh, I had a good sleep, so I felt good. You felt good not because of the sleep. Because only in the deep sleep state, the mind went and dissolved itself in the Atma. So therefore, at that point, the jiva experienced the blissful nature of the Atma. Atma's blissful nature experience. And that is what you are reporting when you wake up in the morning as happiness. As happiness, not from the sleep. So deep sleep state is an indication of that happiness of the self inside. And there the person is not there, ego is not there, body is not there, mind is not there, intelligence is not there, nothing is there, only happiness exists. That is that happiness, what we call it as anandam. And that is Krishna's form, anandarupam. Krishna has addressed this, anandarupam. That anandam is Krishna. That anandam is Krishna. And that is what is experienced in the deep sleep state. So having spoken that, Krishna is saying to us that this divine nature and demonic nature, this chapter, we have to purely understand on that basis. If you are experiencing a similar happiness, what you are experienced in the deep sleep state, in your wakened state, then you can say that you have divine nature. Or if you are still feeling happy in this world with your activities, with the mind, intelligence, senses, and you are feeling happiness and enjoying this world, you are a demon. This is the definition, Krishna's definition. It's not my definition, Krishna's definition. Krishna sees like that. That is how you have to understand this chapter. Otherwise, it makes no sense, all these things. Spiritual life, Krishna is pointing out to us how valuable and important is this spiritual life. Even after hearing so much, we find it difficult to accept it within us. Isn't it? Our demonic nature comes out very quickly when it finds an opportunity. It comes out in that way. That is why Krishna is saying here that if you don't want to become a demon, then if you want to become that divine nature, that is why Krishna had no interest to discuss about demonic nature. Krishna only wanted to talk about that divine nature. Remember that? Abhaya sattva samshuddhi jnana yoga vivasthiti dhanam damashta yajnascha swadhyaya stava arjavam. The first few verses. Ahimsa, satyam, akrodam, tyagam, shandi, abhaishanam, daya bodeshu, aloliptam, mardavam, hri, ajabalam, tejas, kshama, vridhi, shaujam. Na droho adhimanida deviga sampadam devi abhijadasya bharata. All those 26 qualities comes from the Alma. If it's not coming from there, it cannot come from anywhere else. It can only come from that source only, nowhere else. And if it is there, you are divine. If it is not there, we are all demons. Nobody likes it being told you are a demon, isn't it? We all like to know, people like to tell, we like to, everybody tell us we are all great devotees, isn't it? But unfortunately, if you go by the 16th chapter, it doesn't work out that way. So, and because it is in the Puranam, these things are spoken through stories to get it across to us. But because it is a subtle part of it, this divine and demon, they are both in the same person. Divinity is there in everybody. The spark of divinity, we call it, the self, isn't it? And they are together. They are together in everyone. But they are not separate. They are not separate also, because it is in one person, both these qualities in them, isn't it? That is why in the Bhagavatam, if you look, you remember? Kashyapa Prajapati had two wives, Didi and Aditi. One person came all the divine children. And that is from Didi Devi. Didi Devi came all the demigods. And Adi Devi came all the demons. Father is the same, mother is different. This is the reason behind it. To show to us that both this divine nature and demonic nature is in the same person. But when it came out, it came through two different channels. Kashyapa Prajapati is the father. Didi Devi and Aditi Devi are his wives, isn't it? From Didi Devi came all the demons. If you look, all the demons came through Didi Devi. That's interesting, is it not? Can you imagine? One mother gives all demons and one mother gives only devotees. How does that happen? Is it not? You have to ask that question. The reason is this. To bring this point to us, to get it to us, that in everyone, demonic and divine nature exist. Mother, as far as Vedic literature is concerned, mother is only provides the body for the child. Father gives the consciousness to the child. So, in Kashyapa Prajapati, both existent, divine nature and the demonic nature. You can see Kashyapa Prajapati's activities, if you look, you will see when Didi Devi approached him for association on an inappropriate time, Kashyapa Prajapati initially tried to resist, but he didn't help. He agreed with her. And they associated together and offended Lord Shiva, and that is why we had Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu, Ravana, Kumbhakarna, Shishubala, Dandavatra. Six of them were born from the same mother came Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, and in another two more lifetimes they had to come as Shishubala and Dandavatra and Ravana and Kumbhakarna as well. So, Didi Devi gave these two birds, so Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, and the other from Aditi Devi, we have all the demigods coming from her. Demigods coming from there. So, even though there were two wives from the same father, they had both, demon and the devotee, both were there inside Kashyapa Prajapati. That is why that this divine nature and demonic nature is in everybody. So, if our happiness, important thing is, what is the difference between a demon, demigod and a demon? If you look from the Puranic point of view, it is like this. A demigod is considered to be that person who has faith in Krishna, who accepts Krishna's authority. A demon is that person who does not accept the authority of Krishna. All the Purana story, if you read, you will see this is the main difference. When Indra has problem, he surrenders to Krishna. And all through Bhagavatam, if you look, whether it is the milk ocean, churning the milk ocean, there was a huge fight between the demons and the demigods. It is all spoken through the story to get the same point through. So demons or devotee, doesn't matter, demigods or demons, whatever it is, the demigod's approach is always to surrender to Krishna. The demon's approach is always to fight against Krishna. That means demigods are aware that the surrendering to Krishna is the right thing to do and realization of the self is more important. Whereas the demons are always thinking Krishna is not important and all their activities are against the principles of spiritual life. So if you look at it this way, depending on whether your happiness is inside or outside, you are classified whether you are a demon or whether you are a devotee. But that is the Puranic way of explaining that. All the demons, if you look, their vision is outside in the world. Whereas the demigods, their vision is inward, towards inward. So as long as our vision is outside, then naturally it leads into giving distress to others. Is it not? You want to give trouble to others. All this exploitation, conquering others, controlling others, it's all coming from that demoniac nature. Because the vision has gone out, the mind has gone out into the world. It's not going able to go back inwards. This is where it's coming from. So, and this you can see in the modern civilization very much so, that how to steal others' wealth in one way or the other. It is done in individual level, corporate level, country level, national level, international level. It's the same thing that's happening, isn't it? You don't let anyone live peacefully. Even big countries are fighting to how to exploit each other, isn't it? So it is the same thing that, like in the industry, modern industry is based on this principle, isn't it? How to get the money, what's in your pocket, into my pocket. That's the only idea behind it. So, and we'll give some nice names to it, how to steal others' money in a very diplomatic way, how to get it out of from others' pocket. So, as far as Krishna is concerned, from Krishna's point of view, it's demoniac. It is demoniac. Normally in the world, if a thief steals something, we'll catch him and hand him over to the police, isn't it? So he has stolen something. The police will arrest him and prosecute him. But these big corporations and big companies, how they do it, how nicely they do it, isn't it? Is anybody prosecuting them, asking them anything about it? No. Because they do it in a very technical way. In a most stylish way, they perform that and nobody can complain anything about it. It's known thing, whether it is banks or whether it is any other private enterprise, or all of them do exactly the same thing. They are thieving people's wealth in different forms, isn't it? So the reason for that is that why does that happen like that? Because our happiness is very much in the outside world. So when that happiness is outside world, this will happen. Knowing this very well, rishis are telling us that if you allow this to happen more, you will be exploited more in this world. That is the principle. If you allow the external world to take control, and if you are finding happiness in the world outside, the external world, you will be exploited by different processes in this way. But the moment you know that my happiness is not outside, it is in the self within, and at that moment, no matter where you are, and you can see that that person will be happy. This is that demonic nature and divine nature, difference why it is important. A person who finds happiness in the world outside is due to his demonic nature. And as long as he has got that happiness outside in the world, the forces in the material nature will exploit him and he will get affected by that. He will suffer from that. But a person with divine nature, if he finds happiness in the self, in self-realization and in the Krishna's words, what he has spoken, no matter wherever he is, he will still be in the happy state. This is why in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we have that story of Sudama and Krishna. Sudama's story is only to explain this one point to us. Sudama, wherever he is going to see Krishna, isn't it? Sudama goes to visit Krishna. And if you look into Bhagavatam, you will see there, in the initial verses, there, addressing Sudama like this, that Sukha Brahmarshi says, Sudeva Goswami says about Sudama, that there was a Brahmana who lived in Dwaraka, he says, like that, and that Brahmana was so poor, he says. Brahmano Brahmavittamaha, Brahmavittama he was. But he had this internal realization so strongly that externally he was very poor. Externally he was very poor. If there is one devotee where Krishna has failed, it is in front of Sudama. Krishna couldn't do anything with him. It was such a difficult situation. That so many things spoken there that in the Bhagavatam, when you see that they say that Sudama had clothes which were very torn and soiled, and he lived in a very poor hut. He was living there. And story like that, presenting Sudama to us as he was in extreme poverty, isn't it? Extreme poverty. And why was that spoken? To get people's sentiments up. To create that sentiments in people's mind. If you say about someone, he's very, very poor, you will give some attention to it. Isn't it? So, and Sudama suffered heavily due to poverty. Isn't it? If you read through Bhagavatam, you will see there. And he had children, and children were asking for food. The parents could not provide the food even for the children. Isn't it? So, when you say all these things to people, people will feel sorry for Sudama. Is it not? We'll all feel sorry for Sudama. How unfortunate. And they'll say to you also, look, you want to be like Sudama tomorrow by taking to Krishna consciousness. They will say like that. Isn't it? So, and then you say that, this is a normal way people think about it. They say, Sudama went to Krishna. Krishna gave him loads of money. And then everybody feels happy. Krishna has done his job and Sudama has done the right thing. He has gone to Krishna and asked for it. So this is how the world takes it. The world take this in this way. That's how they take it. So from this you can see one important thing, that this is the way most of the world people understand this Sudama story. Even politicians, they talk about Sudama in the election propaganda, they will talk about sometimes Sudama also, that they say, look, Sudama was given all the wealth by Krishna. Similarly, the government should also give sufficient wealth for the people. And to say this, do you require Bhagavatam for this? To say a story like this? Then people start asking, they think that in Srimad Bhagavatam, when they read the Sudama story, a lot of people think like this. That Sudama was very poor, he had no money and he was suffering heavily. Therefore, he went to Krishna. Krishna gave him a lot of money and everything was sorted. After that, he lived very happily thereafter. And people think, oh, amazing story. And from that, many people take it, oh, if Sudama has got so much wealth, why should Krishna is not giving me the wealth in the same way? And if you read the description in the Bhagavatam, when Sudama came back home and saw the wealth,
even today's the greatest, wealthiest people won't have that kind of wealth. That's the type of wealth they were offered to. But the in a ordinary people will see Bhagavadam in that way. But the spiritual understanding of that story is this, that Sudama was not looking for the wealth. He was the richest person in this world because of his spiritual wealth. That wealth was not fascinating for him. It was not at all fascinating. Because all Sudama's happiness was not in the world outside. It came from the self. Brahmajnani, isn't it? If you look at that verse, you will see there that in the Bhagavadam, when you... Shuka Brahmarshi mentions this. You have that chapter? Chapter 80, and 8th or 9th verse where Sri Shuka Vajai says about that. This is, which one is this?
This is 8.
Just a minute.
This is 8.
This is 8. This I'm not sure which one it is, number 1. And this is on the commentary. Okay. Oh, this is the way?
Which one? Forward or backward?
Maybe for backward.
Backward.
Ah. What's the verse?
Chapter,
verse 6. 18, is it? 1086. After, if you had understood that verse, you will never judge Sudama like that. It says, Krishnasyasil Sakha Kaschil, Sakha Kaschil Brahmano Brahma Vitama. Krishna had a friend, Sudama, here of course in the translation says, who was most learned in Vedic knowledge and detached from all senses. That is not his only qualification. His qualification is Brahmano Brahmavitamaha. Brahmavitama. Brahmavitama means realized inside the truth. That is Brahmavitama. It is not simply he had some knowledge of the books or some detached from sense. There are so many people who are detached from sense enjoyment. But here, is, and he says here, Virakaha Indriyarteshu Prashandalma Jidendriyaha. All these are supplementary qualities. The important quality he had was he was Brahmavitama. Brahmana, Brahmavitama. Brahmavitama means Brahman realized. The personality he was. And such a person goes to see Krishna. Such a person goes to see Krishna. That is why Sri Shuka Vaja, Krishna Syasi Saha Kaschil Brahmano Brahmavitama Virakta Indriyateshu Prashandalma Jidendriyaha. Then next one. Then if you look into the next verses, you will see it's all about the poverty. Sudama's poverty, what is spoken there. But if you catch that word Brahmavitama, then you have got it. Sudama's state of consciousness. So, so here, important thing is this, that the nature of Sudama in the last two lines, Brahmano Brahmavitamaha, and all the divine qualities are the next two lines, what is spoken there. So where is that divine qualities coming from? It is from the self, from the knowledge of the self, from the knowledge of the self. And that is what Krishna is pointing out to us in this chapter also. If you have divine qualities, it means it coming from the self. If you have demoniac qualities, it means you are in the world outside.
demonic qualities can come only from the world outside. If that means if our mind is looking for happiness, recognition, fame, popularity in this world, we think all these things very important, isn't it? That in all television channels if you appear, all the newspapers if your name is spoken, and you've got thousands of followers and everything, Krishna says that it is demoniac. Why? Because of this. That aphiric nature inside is there in that person. That is why he wants recognition in the world. He wants the recognition in the world. So that is the most important thing. So this one important thing in these verses is, first thing, that Krishna had no intention to talk about demonic nature. Krishna wants us to understand what divine nature is. That is the first 26 qualities spoken. Abhaya Sattva Samshuddhi onwards. Abhijadasi Bharata, like 3 or 4 verses. Then when Arjuna had the doubt whether I am a demoniac person or a divine person, Krishna started told Arjuna that you are not a demoniac person, you have divine qualities inside. Only then you will understand Bhagavad Gita. Only a person with divine nature will understand Bhagavad Gita. Demoniac person cannot understand Bhagavad Gita. And he also explained there that a person who has divine nature, divine qualities comes from the self. It doesn't come from the world. Demoniac qualities comes from the world because we pick it up with our nature, swabhava. That means our mind has gone into the world, and due to the interaction with the world, we develop this swabhavam inside us. And that is the demonic nature. That is the demonic nature. Having said that, Krishna is saying here, finally, Krishna says to him that an ideal example given in the Bhagavatam is Sudama. And if you understand that verse, you can see that Sakha Kaschit Brahmano Brahmavittama. That Brahmana was a Brahmavittama. That is was his greatest asset. That means he had that. Sudama was, Krishna met Sudama and Krishna is asking, how are you? Sudama says, I am in actual bliss, he says. Never said one word about his poverty. Didn't say anything, isn't it? And that's what put Krishna in an awkward situation. Krishna wanted, because while leaving home, Sudama's wife told him, when you go there, you don't have to say anything. Because Sudama said, I'm not going there to ask for money. Sudama said, I'll go there because I'll see Krishna. He is my old friend. I'll go and see him. But I'm not going to ask for anything. I don't need anything. As far as Sudama is concerned, he doesn't need anything. Why? Brahmano Brahmavittamaha. Brahman realized he is. What does he want after that? But she was finding it difficult to run the house and the children and looking after them. So she said to him, you don't have to ask anything. But if after seeing you, if he hasn't felt that he has to give you something, it is better, no point in asking such people anyway. This was her conclusion. So there's a lot of discussion happened between the husband and the wife before he went to see Krishna. And Sudama made it very clear to his wife that I'm not going to ask anything, but I will go and see him. He felt happy to go to see his old friend at the school, isn't it? School friend. So when that meeting happened, when Krishna saw the situation and he still saw that Sudama was not in a mood to ask anything, Krishna was finding it very difficult how to start the conversation further. So in that discussion between Krishna, Rukmini and Sudama, you will see a lot of interesting things comes out from there. So whatever it is, what Krishna is saying here is this. If a person is in full with the divine nature, he won't have any desires inside. Why? Because all the happiness what he gets comes from the self. It doesn't come from the world outside. A demoniac nature is the one, a person who says always want more, 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 endlessly desires following one after the other. So, so this you can see in this world also, in the world outside sometimes. People, you can observe these things, if particularly when you go to places like Vrindavan and Govardhanam and all that, when you are going circumambulating the Govardhana hill, sometimes there will be fighting among the sadhus. Sadhus will be fighting each other. It's nice to watch them fighting, how they fight each other. So in one instance, there is one story spoken about it. They were having a parikrama of the Govardhana hill, and there were two sadhus were fighting each other. So after a while, when they have crossed that, this sannyasi was saying to others who were with him that when it was pointed out to him, look how sadhus are fighting, he says, there's nothing surprising, he said. There's nothing surprising about it, he said. That because they are sadhus, they don't have a place to stay. They're living on the roadside. So they're fighting outside. The rich people are also fighting at home. They're also not peaceful. If you think that all houses are very happy and peaceful everywhere, that's also misunderstanding, isn't it? So fighting is going on, whether it is on the roadside between the sadhus or it is with the rich people who are so-called aristocratic or so-called highly placed people in the society. They are also fighting. There is no difference at all. So basically what sannyasi was saying was, both of them have got ragadvesham. Ragadvesham is there in them. Ragadvesham is there in the sadhus also. And that ragadvesham is the same. It is coming from avidya. Ajnanam it is. Whether it is with the so-called rich people or, what do they say, posh people or who are living in the posh places and whom you consider in the leaders in the society, they are also fighting. Equally, whom we can see sadhus as, sometimes they are also fighting. Whoever is fighting, it's coming from the avidya inside. The avidya inside, which where from where ragam and dvesham comes from that, isn't it? So this is a story that in many instances you will see among the devotees also, sometimes these things can manifest. These things can manifest. We form some opinion in our mind about others. Oh, sadhus, oh, they should not fight each other. We take it like that. It's not like that. That is why Krishna is saying to us, this divine nature and demonic nature is there in the sadhus also. It is there in the sadhu is not one because he has put saffron on and he has changed his clothes or grown his beard. He has become a sadhu. He doesn't become a sadhu like that, isn't it? So sometimes you can see this, that this particular relationship among the people, wherever there is ragadvesham, wherever there is ajnanam or avidya, there will be always these problems, isn't it? There is always these problems. So that is why in the Bhartrahari mentions this. He says that when there is a lot of wealth, Bhartrahari says you have to be extremely careful, because you see in the Bhagavatam also mentions that, isn't it? That's where all the problems. He says Lakshmi Devi, when she comes, she doesn't come on her own. She comes with the her friends as well. So it's like this, they say, if Lakshmi Devi is coming inside and if you keep your doors open, just like when Lakshmi Devi is walking in, just like some mosquitoes comes inside, in the same way kamam, krotham, anger, lust, anger, greed, all these things also walks in along with that. So that is the nature of this world. That's the nature of this world. So like if you go into the boats in Ganga River, when you try to cross, when you get into the boat, some of those boats are so old and some of them has got even leaking, water leaks through that. So many places, they cost you so little to cross Ganga River, they'll take you from one side to the other. And some places they have got a little bit newer boats, but there are quite a lot of old boats also at different places they are operating. So sometimes this boatman, when the water enters in the boat, he keeps on taking water and throwing it out continuously because water is getting into the boat. He knows that he just has to cross a short distance. So he manages the boat inside. So by the time he keeps on doing this for a while, by then you reach the other side of the river. So similarly, in this world also, when we are dealing transaction with the world, these things will get in and we have to continuously get rid of it from inside, what is got inside. What is got inside through the transaction. So similarly, due to prarabdham, we may sometimes get money in this life. Due to prarabdham, it may come. And you can't say at that time, oh, don't come. I don't want any money. You don't have to say that. But when it keeps coming, you have to keep it draining it out. Instead, if you think that it is coming now, due to prarabdham only, nothing else. If you think that it's due to your smartness, it's wrong. But it keeps coming. Sometimes you see money comes. Even devotees, it's not unknown thing. Money will come from some source unknowingly, but that's due to prarabdham. And when money comes like that, you should continuously empty it. Otherwise, it will cause all these problems. That is why that the example they give this, particularly that boat that is crossing the Ganges River, Ganga River, that when the water is coming in, that person is taking the water out with some mug or something like that. He throws the water outside completely so that the boat doesn't sink. And similarly, Krishna is saying this also, that so in other words, not to carry any baggage. So if it is like that, the question will come, if you give money to a poor person, will he be happy in life? No. Is poverty unhappiness in life? And you can offer money to that poor person, but often you can see when you have that poverty, there could be some situations with the body also, which may not allow him to feel happy in this world. Poverty is not only related to wealth, isn't it? So, in one sense, if you are very poor, then there is a possibility that you won't eat sweets. And if you don't have the sweets, then you don't have a chance of getting diabetes. But very often you will see, particularly in India, many, many rich people, their children have got this problem because of excessive eating of the sweets. And often you will find among the children who have got a lot of cash to flash around, they get into all these kind of problems, isn't it? So in order that, Krishna says here, the Bhagavatam says here that to understand this body, Srimad Bhagavatam statement this is, that it is better that you remain poor in this world to understand this body. It helps. If you look into Srimad Bhagavatam, you know there is a story, Nalaguveran Manigriva. Remember? In the Krishna's pastimes. Why is that story put in there? You have to ask that question. It's not, of course, story is story. You have to see what happened with Nalaguveran Manigriva. They were the children of the wealthiest person. Is it not? They were the children of Kuvera. Kuvera is the treasurer of the demigods. He's a great devotee as well, Kuvera. So Kuvera's children was this Nalaguveran Manigriva. They were the two children. What happened to them? In the Bhagavatam, if you see, it mentions about that they, because of their wealth, the ego built up so strongly inside. And that turned out to be to offend Sri Narada Maharshi. And in order to rectify them, Narada Maharshi cursed them. Cursed both Nalaguveer and Manigriva, and they had to become two Arjuna trees. In the Bhagavatam, the story you will see there. They became two Arjuna trees. And they had to stand in Vrindavan for 100 years. Fortunately, because Kuvera was a devotee, Narada Maharshi agreed to get them released after 100 years. And in that 100 years, they stood there in Vrindavanam as two trees, simply because they offended Sri Narada Maharshi. Where did that thought of offending Narada Maharshi came? it came from this hangaram inside, ego, due to wealth everything else happened. First, due to wealth, the ego that they were the son of the richest person, number one. Because they were the children of the richest person, they had also a good education due to that. Due to the education, the ego. Then the ego due to the youth. In the youthful stage, everybody feels very strong about themselves, isn't it? Ahankaram is most powerful in the youth. Above all, due to the effect of the alcohol. Four things are mentioned in the Bhagavatam. Due to higher birth as the son of Kubera, higher birth. Due to higher education, due to higher wealth, and again due to youth and the alcohol consumed. All these things contributed to that offending Sri Narada Maharshi. It ended up in offending Narada Maharshi. And the answer to that, fasting, forcefully put him 100 years there, standing there. Antada Srimadhandasya Daridryam Paramanjanam. Bhagavatam says like this. Antada Srimadhandasya Daridryam Paramanjanam. So if you look that story of the Nalagavera and Manigriva and look at how Narada Maharshi had to send him to take that body. Although born from a very wealthy family, he had to take that body and stand there for 100 years. And as far as Krishna is concerned, that in case of Sudama's case, this problem didn't exist, isn't it? Krishnasyasil sakha kaschil brahmano brahma vittama. A brahmana who is poor, he was not, he says there, that when Parikshit asked this question to Shuka Brahmarshi about this story of Sudama, Shuka Brahmarshi first thought himself, what should I say to Parikshit, isn't it? And he mentions there, Vasudeve Bhagavadi Nimagna Hridayo Bravid. You have to remember, in the 10th canto of Bhagavatam, this Sudama story comes at the very end of the 10th canto. Is it not? So, generally in the Bhagavatam, the three modes of material nature and the devotees under the three modes of material nature is brought inside in three different levels. In the first many instances, you will see devotees in the mode of ignorance, then the mode of passion, and then the mode of goodness. So, if you look carefully in the Bhagavatam, you will find this, that many of the earlier devotees, they were not very educated spiritually, particularly the gopis. They were not educated. In the lowest level of tamogunam, they lived. But they were made first-class devotees by Krishna's kripa, that is grace, that is. Then, if you go further, in the Bhagavatam, you will see there those demons, Kamsa, Shishubhala, Jarasandha, so many others like that who are in the mood of passion. So, to remove that passionate nature from them and to kill them and to purify them, Krishna has performed those pastimes in the middle chapters, what you find there. And finally, in the end of that 10th canto, what you find is devotees like Shrudadeva, Mithilashva, Bahulashva, Sudama and Vasudev, Devaki and devotees like that, all on the mode of higher level, on the Sattugunam. So, Krishnasyasil Sadakaschil Brahmano Brahma Vitama. So, Virakta Indriyarteshu Prashandalma Jitendriya. Look at all what they have spoken. Viraktaha Indriyarteshu Prashandalma Jitendriya, his qualification. Not only he is Brahmana, first of all Brahmana, then Brahmavittama, then Virakta Indriyarteshu. That means complete freedom from senses. Complete freedom from the senses. Virakta Indriyarteshu. And then what else? Prashandalma. Prashantalma. Prashantalma means always in that state of Shanti. What else? Jinendriya. Jinendriya. That his senses are completely under control. So, he says like that, that there was a Brahmana who lived, who was Prashantalma, and who was always fixed in the truth. And this is how the story of Sudama begins there. And when Shuka Brahmarshi presents Sudama to us, he is presenting to us, although he was, the poverty has not touched him. Who? Sudama. He was never touched by his poverty. And the way he goes to see Krishna, as though like an emperor is going to see Krishna. He's going like an emperor. He's not going like a poor person. Because inside is full. Inside is full. And that is why, and that is the reason when you see there, from the devotee's point of view in the story, it's spoken like this. But Krishna came down to see him. He didn't go to Krishna. Krishna came down to receive him. That is that state. Brahmano Brahmavittama. That when Krishna sees that state of a devotee, Krishna is seeing that state of Sudama. And if you look into the conversation between Sudama and Krishna, you will see a lot of interesting things. That, okay, we will say that Krishna is such a nice friend. He does remembers his schoolmates or college mates. But whatever it is, that conversation, if you look at, you will see there that Krishna came down to receive Sudama, and when Krishna was taking Sudama to his place and put him on the throne where Krishna used to sit, and Krishna washed his feet. Krishna washed Sudama's feet. You can see, read in the Bhagavatam that mentions there. So, so later on you will see that so many poets have spoken about this relationship with Krishna and Sudama. Krishna and Sudama. Sudama was never poor. Sudama was always rich. Not materially, but because of this Brahmavittama. Brahmavittama. Then, so, when Krishna saw Sudama, in the meeting, if you look there, you will see there that Krishna felt extremely happy after seeing Sudama. Sudama's poverty did not disturb Krishna. Poverty did not disturb Krishna. If you look into the 19th verse, you will see there in the same chapter. The same chapter. It mentions there that when Krishna touched Sudama at that time, it says, Sakyuhu Priyasya. What does that verse say? 19th verse, yes. Sakyu priyasya viparsher angasanga adinurvradaha prido vimunjad abbindun netrabhyam pushkarekshanaha. This has caused a lot of questions. Sakyu priyasya vipreshu. When Vipra, this Brahmana, had come and touched him, Sakyu priyasya viparsher angasanga adinurvradaha. Angasanga means Krishna touched the body of Sudama. Angasangir, Angasangad, Angasangadi Nirvridaha. Nirvridi. Nirvridi means Krishna felt that happiness inside. Prido Vimunjad Abhindun Netrabhyam Pushkarekshana. That Krishna started crying. Netrabhyam Pushkarekshana is Krishna. From Krishna's eyes, tears started coming. Now, ordinary people will think that, oh, seeing poor Sudama, he has no money, I have to give him a 10-pound note or something like that. So that's what how people will think. This is the difficulty in Bhagavatam. This is the problem in Bhagavatam. When you don't understand that what is Shuka Brahmarshi is trying to tell us, Sudeva Goswami is saying to us that Brahman state, so realized he was, Krishna felt that within himself by touching Sudama, Sudama's body. Sakyu priyasya viprasher angasangadi nirvridaha. Angasangadi Nirvridaha. That God, I think. Where's it gone? 19, I think. Yeah. Can you imagine? Krishna is feeling the ecstasy after touching Sudama. Normally, we will think, why Krishna has to feel? Krishna is already ecstatic, isn't he? Does he has to touch somebody to get ecstasy? That will be the question. That ecstasy is referring to this realization of Sudama. To stress that point, that's why it's spoken like that. Even Krishna felt that ecstasy by touching Sudama. Sakhyu priyasya viprashayar angasangadi nirvridaha. Angasanga means, normally, angasanga means, gopis felt that when they touched Krishna. You remember that? In the 10th canto you will see. Gopis felt that angas nirvriti, what the word nirvriti? Nirvriti means the happiness coming from the soul. That was felt by the gopis when they touched Krishna. Here Krishna is saying they felt that he felt that happiness when he touched the when he touched Sudama. Prito vimunjat abhindun netrabhyam pushkarekshana. And from that, Krishna started feeling tears in Krishna's eyes. Krishna started experiencing. So, while studying this chapter, particularly this Sudama's incident, Sudama's life and Sudama's relationship with Krishna, you can see there that self-realization brings a different personality altogether. In the material life, in the bodily identity, we consider certain things. But in the spiritually realized state, the whole truth is different. Whole truth is different. So, if you look into the same chapter, 30th verse, 30 and 31. How does he go?
Next.
Ah, then on this side, say. Yeah. That's the 31st, yeah. Kachil Gurugule Vasam Brahmans Smarasi Nau Yatha Dijo Vijnaya Vijnayam Tamasaparam Ashnute. Tamasaparam Ashnute. This is Krishna's words. Krishna is saying to the Sudama that Kachil Gurugule Vasam, when we lived in the Gurugulam together, Brahmans Marasi now Yata. How we do you remember what happened at that time? It says Dijo Vijnaya Vijnayam Tamasaparam Ashnute. Now in the translation it says there, has learned from his guru all that is to be learned, he can enjoy spiritual life which lies beyond all ignorance. Now what is important here is that Dijo, look at that verse. Dijo vijnana vijnayam tamasaparam asnute. Tamasaparam asnute. Dijo vijnana vijnayam tamasaparam asnute. That means, if you had known what is to be known, that means avidya has completely gone from inside and you are fixed in the truth. That is what that means. Dijo vijnana vijnayam tamasaparam asnude. Krishna put it in two lines. But that verse is pointing, saying to, praising Sudama for his self-realization. That's what it is. Dijo vijnana vijnayam tamasaparam asnude. He says that our Gurugula Vasam, when we lived in the Gurugulam and after our education, he has gone home. Sudama went home. Krishna came to Dwaraka and then got married, 16,108 wives, 10 children from each wife, and it was a huge family. So Krishna was busy with all the politics going on, fighting, involved with the Pandavas and the Kauravas. And in that process, Krishna had to get involved with many other battles as well. children were causing problems, is it not? Aniruddha gave him trouble, Pradyumna gave him trouble, Samba gave him trouble. They have all done exactly what the father has done. Krishna gone and kidnapped Rukmini. So Aniruddha thought, why shouldn't I do that? So he goes to Delhi, to Hastinapur, Indraprastha at that time, and kidnaps Duryodhana's daughter. Samba did that, isn't it? Samba did that. Aniruddha gone and done the same thing with Bana's daughter. So when one day Narada Maharshi went and asked him, Krishna, Krishna says, my prarabdha never seems to come to an end, he said. Krishna says this. And Krishna couldn't say anything to them because Krishna has also done the same thing. So Aniruddha, Samba, and to some extent Pradyumna also was involved in various problems. So it was an endless householder life for Krishna. Krishna's householder life never came to an end. It went on and on and on and on. Is it not? That's what you find in the Bhagavatam. If you look at Krishna's time in Dwaraka. Now, if you look at Sudama, Sudama had no problems like that. And Krishna says, practically what is the difference between Krishna and Sudama here? Sudama lived in realized state but did not engage in activities. Krishna, fully in the realized state, engaged in all the activities without any difficulty. That was the difference what you find in the Bhagavatam. That when you look at Krishna's activities in this world, it mentions like that also. Jnanam, ajnanam, two things here, isn't it? So, Krishna told Sudama that what he mentions there, that Vijo vijnana vijnayam. This is the mercy of Krishna to Sudama. Sudama, don't get involved like me. I've got done. Krishna can do that. But to Sudama he says, Vijo vijnana vijnayam tamasa param asnute. That you stay beyond this tamasam. Tamasa means unrealized state, like us. This we are in the tamasa. Tamasa param asnute. That you transcend these three modes of material nature and always stay in the transcendental state, in realized state, in other words. That was the state of Sudama's life. Krishna's life was exactly opposite. Although fully realized, Krishna was always engaged in activity. There is no other incarnation like this, like Krishna, for this reason only. That whether you look into all other incarnations, they have all appeared with some purpose and gone. In Krishna's appearance alone, you will find this one very special nature. Fully in the realized state, conducted in all sorts of activities in this world. That is this personality, Krishna's personality. So, all those qualifications is what Krishna has given to Sudama. Shukha Brahmarshi started that, isn't it? Brahmano, Brahmavittama, Virakto, Indriyarteshu, Prashandatma, Jidendriya. That is the first from Shukha Brahmarshi. Then Krishna is saying to him that Dvijo Vijnana Vijnayam, Tamasa Param Ashnude. You are a Dvija who has transcended these three modes of material nature. So, what is important here is that one who has got that divine nature, that person, whether he is situated in the knowledge of the self, or even if he is in any other circumstances in this world, it will not bind him. That is why those two examples, Krishna and Sudama. Sudama in the fully realized state, but because he has got that divine nature in him, divine nature is there in Sudama, therefore nothing in this world can touch him. He has divine nature completely. Krishna has the divine nature in him. But even though Krishna was completely busy with activities in this world, it did not touch him. That is the power of divine nature. That's the power of divine nature. And he will always be in that peaceful state. Have you seen one time Krishna getting upset anywhere? In the middle of all this politics, fighting, war, kidnapping. You can't believe the kind of things. From beginning to end, Krishna's life is full of revolutionary nature. Isn't it? Always something or the other going on. Started from the childhood itself. From the childhood it started, and right up to the minute Krishna left this world, there was fighting going on. Even the last minute, before he left in Prabhasam, brought all the family members and made them to fight. And even in the middle of all that fighting, Krishna maintains that transcendental position. So whether it is Sudama who is in that state, or whether it's Krishna who is in a different situation altogether, as long as that divine nature is working inside, it will always be Shanti inside. That is the important point. That Shanti will be there in that person. He will not be disturbed by anything. Whatever activities they may do, and even if they don't do any activities, still the Shanti will be present in that person. That is what that story, Sudama's story, is trying to point out to us from the spiritual side. On a material level, when you look at it, you can say all the other things what we have spoken about, that Sudama was a very poor person and he went to Krishna and Krishna gave him loads of money and he was happy. And when he came home, whole palace was standing there, lot of servants, and if you read, everything is made of ivory in the palace, and how opulent Sudama was. So people get the impression like that. But if you understand that Sudama's activities and what is Sukadeva Goswami trying to tell us, this is the point that is coming out through that. And that is why it's so important. And that is why we look at the next verse. That's the verse 12. No, that's the Devi Sambad Vimokshaya, that one. Fifth one, yeah. So we saw there earlier, just a minute, we'll go to that. Devi Sambad Vimokshaya Nibhandai Asuri Mata Mashuja Sampadam Devim Abhijadosi Pandava, isn't it? We remember that verse in the earlier fifth verse, I think. Yeah. Devi Sambad Vimokshaya Nibhandai Asuri Mata Mashuja Sampadam Devi Abhijadosi Pandava. The transcendental qualities are conducive for liberation, whereas the demonic qualities make for bondage. Do not worry, you son of Pandu, for you are born with the divine qualities. This is that, it is from that all these other things were come out from that. We'll have a short break and then we'll continue.
श्रेयकैर्दवचन्द्रियाभिधरणं मिथ्यावधूजीवनम् आनन्दं बुद्धिवर्धनं प्रतिपदपूर्णामृतास्वादनं सर्वात्मा सुगमं परं विजयते श्रीकृष्णसङ्कीर्तनम् नामनामकारि बहुधा निज सर्वशक्ति तत्रापि दानेमिला स्मरणेन काला एतादृशी तव कृपा भगवन् ममावि दुर्दैवमीदृशमिहाजनि नानुरागाः तृणारविषुनीचेन सहिष्णुनामानि नामानदेन कीर्तनीय सदा हरि मधनं न जनं न सुन्दरीं कविनां वा जगदीश कामये मम जन्मनि जन्मनीश्वरी भवदार्भक्तिरहै दुवित्वयि ऐ नन्दननुज किङ्करं पतितामहं वृषमे भवाम्बुदौ कृपया तव पादपङ्कजस्थितधूलिसदृशं विचिन्तयाम् गलदश्रुधारया वदनं गद्गदरुद्धया गिरा पुलकैर्निजितं कदा वभूतवं नाम ग्रहणे भविष्यति युगायुधं निमेषेण चक्षुषा प्राविशायुधम् शून्यायिदं जगत् सर्वं गोविन्द विरहे न मे आश्लिष्य वा पादरदां विनष्टु मम अदर्शनां मर्महदां करोतु वा यथा तथा वा विददानुलम्बनौ मत्प्राणनाथास्तु नैव नापरा.
what we were discussing before. Sudama and Krishna. Sudama Brahmavitama. Krishna is also Brahmavitama. But whatever may be the situation, Sudama's situation is, Sudama lives a life in poverty, but still Prashandalma Jitendriya, always in that state of realization, always. And Krishna, full of activity, busy with activities, but in spite of that, never disturbed in the that Shanti inside all the time. So it's not the financial status of a person that decides the self-realization. Realized state is independent of all that. Whether you are self-realized, whether you are busy with activities, or whether you're not busy with any activities, self-realized state person is untouched by either of them. So Krishna is mentioning to us that in that state of what we looked at, Nalagavera and Manigriva's case also, just because they were rich, that was not their disqualification. Because they were rich, that was not their disqualification. Why? Because they offended Narada Maharshi because of the dambham, that madam that has developed inside, ahangaram inside, how that was affected by that, isn't it? Because you can see that there are many, many wealthy people who were realized. For example, in the Bhagavatam, if you look, Ambarish Maharaj, he was an emperor, but he was always in the spiritually realized state. Janaka in the Bhagavad Gita, Rishabhadev in the Bhagavatam, they were all emperors, weren't they? Rishabhadev was an emperor, Janaka Maharaj was an emperor, Ambarish was an emperor. But although they were emperors, emperors means very wealthy and really a lot of facilities in this world, but in spite of that, they were great realized souls as well. Ashtavakra Gita came through Janaka's discussion with him, is it not? So similarly, Ambarish also, you'll see in the Bhagavatam how Krishna recognized, although he was an emperor, as a great soul. So wealth or position has no relationship with the self-realization. They can act in the self-realized state, but why did this happen then? Nalagavera and Manigriva's case, if you look at, you will see that Krishna says also that the example, that Krishna himself is the example. In the middle of the greatest opulence, Krishna lived. Is it not? Krishna was in the middle of greatest opulence. But look at what comes from Krishna, the Bhagavad Gita and Ekadasha Skandam. Bhagavad Gita and Ekadasha Skandam is the cream of spiritual knowledge. Sarva Aubanishado Gavo Dogda Govala Nandana. Bhagavad Gita is the milk that has been milked from the all the Upanishads. That knowledge is coming from Krishna, who lives in the middle of all the opulences of this world in Dwaraka. When Krishna lived in Dwaraka, Krishna's opulence was unlimited. Opulence. 16,108 wives and 10 children from each of those wives. Imagine that. And then, remember, Narada Maharshi went to see Krishna's householder life. It is in the Bhagavatam, you can see. How he was able to maintain such a huge family. And most of those children were married later. He had grandchildren from all of them. All those children, he had grandchildren from them. And then he had a daughter from each wife. And all those daughters were married and they had children. So imagine the size of that family, Krishna's family. In the middle of all that, what we get here from Krishna is this Bhagavad Gita and Ekadasha Skandam, what he spoke to Uddhava. What does that indicate? Even such a, there is no other householder who lived a householder life like Krishna in this world, isn't it? Krishna's householder life is so well known that who could do a householder life like the way Krishna has done? But in spite of that householder life, from him comes this Bhagavad Gita and Ekadasha Skandam in the Bhagavatam. In order to indicate to us that that state of realization is such that no karma, no other activities can disturb that state of Krishna state, isn't it? So So, but Krishna is mentioning here, if you look at these verses, 11, 12, 13 to 15. Let's read through those verses. Chindam aparimeyam cha. Pralayantam upashridaha. Kamo bhaboga parama. Etavad iti nishchitaha. Asha pashashadevaddha. Kamakrodha parayanaha. Ihande kama bhogartham. Anyeyenartasanchayan. Then 13 to 15. Idam adhyamaya labdhvam. Imam prapse manoratham. Idam asti idam abhime. Bhavishyati punardhanam. Asau maya hatau shatro. Hanishye cha paranabhi. Ishwarohamaham bhogi. Siddhoham bhalavan sukhi. Adhyo bijanavan asmi. Konyosti sadrushomayam. Yakshe dasyami modishya. Ityajnana vimohitaha. So, 11 to 15. Krishna is saying in the 11th and 12th, they believe that to gratify the senses is the prime necessity of life. Thus, until the end of life, their anxiety is immeasurable, bound by a network of hundreds and thousands of desires, and absorbed in lust and anger, they secure money by illegal means for sense gratification. Then the last three verses. Demonic person thinks, so much wealth do I have today, and I will gain more according to my schemes. So much is mine now, and it will increase in the future more and more. He is my enemy, and I have killed him, and my other enemies will also be killed. I am the lord of everything. I am the enjoyer. I am perfect, powerful, and happy. I am the richest man, surrounded by aristocratic relatives. There is none so powerful and happy as I am. I shall perform sacrifices. I shall give some charity, and thus I shall rejoice. In this way, such persons are deluded by ignorance. Deluded by ignorance. So, Krishna is saying here that the in these verses that sometimes how the mind operates with people, that desires, what that builds up inside. These are all symptoms of the demoniac nature, how that desires builds up. Remember in the second chapter, Krishna mentions, what does he say? Prajahadi yadakaman sarvan partham anogadan, isn't it? And we know very well how that desires come to us. And when it comes, we don't remember those verses, do we? We don't remember the verses. Prajahari yadakaman, we will understand the verses. But when it comes to practical life, it doesn't happen. So deeply it has got inside, that desires. Desires has got inside. And that is why Krishna says here that there is unlimited it is. Chindau aparimeyam cha. You can't measure how much desire somebody has got. Chindau aparimeyam cha. Pralayantam upashridau, Krishna says. That the depth of that, Krishna says there, that pralayanta upashudu kamobha bhoga parama edava didi nishchida. That because this aparimeyam chinta, this chinta which is unlimited, constantly they are in anxiety all the time. There is no shanti inside. Constant anxiety inside, he says there. And it is immeasurable, he says there. And not only that, he says, kamobha bhoga parama edavadini nishchida. Hundreds and thousands of this desires what is working inside. And what else? Asha pasha shadair baddha kama krotha parayana. They have surrendered to kamam and krotham. You will always notice kamam and krotham is spoken together. Why? They are brothers. They are brothers, isn't it? You can see krotham without kamam, krotham won't come. Whenever krotham comes, you can take it that there was a strong kamam behind it. That's why they are called brothers. They are called brothers. Every time, whenever Krishna has spoken about kamam, he will always talk along with krotham. In the second chapter also, you will see there, when Krishna mentions about the... Yeah. Krishna, about the... When he talked about the... verses in the... those verses, yeah. Sangal Sanjayade Kamam Kamal Krodho Bijayade. If Kamam, if the elder brother is there, is the elder brother, Kamam. If he comes, the younger brother will follow. That's how it is. Kamal Krodho Bijayade. So it is from there that Krishna is talking to us that the people will go because there is desires motivating them. Travel to so many different countries to make money in different ways, one way or the other, isn't it? Kamopa bhoga varamam. And once you've fallen into that trap, this which Krishna says here, chintau aparimeyam cha pralayantam upashito. If you have fallen into the trap, then even, Krishna says, even after the devastation happens, you will continue going further. Pralayantam upashito, he says there, isn't it? Pralayanda Upashrado, that means even after devastation means that whole thing is destroyed, but the desires have not gone away. You will come back with another body after the creation happens again. You will come back with another body and all these desires will come back again and you will start creating fresh bodies for us. So risky this desires creates inside. So risky that is. The desires that once it's generated inside, that desires is capable of giving birth to such an extent that even at the time of devastation, when everything is devastated and then further second creation begins again, we will come back here with all those desires and we will continue with fresh bodies to fulfill those desires. So powerful are those desires. That is the reason why rishis are telling us again and again that somehow withdraw from the world, pull back from the world, not allow the desires to build up inside. This is coming from Rishi's message. Why they went to the forest? Not to allow these desires to build up inside. Whereas in the modern world, what do we say? The more you are aggressive and the more, get it, he said. If you don't get it, then work for it, get it, cultivate. You're not ambitious enough. And in that way, see how much avidya works. This is the way avidya operates. Shastram will say one thing, society will say exactly the opposite. Shastram says, don't create desires. Society says, if you don't have desires, how will the society work? Said, if everybody, if you don't have desires, people won't make money, industry won't run. Then what will happen to the society? So society's ethics is coming from avidya. Shastram says from the spiritual side. So you can see the problem. Every time when you try to follow the society, you are acting against the spiritual side. You are acting against the spiritual side. So one has to be extremely careful. That is why when we read these verses in the Bhagavad Gita, it wakes you up inside. You start seeing that this world whom I trust, I trusted and I find that it's a safe place to live, is not a safe place. This is the place which generates more and more new fresh bodies for us. The heavens keep coming back, repeat the cycle of birth and death. That's what this world does to us. So it makes us more serious. He says, kamobha bhoga parama. That means the only goal of life is fulfilling the desires, nothing else. That is why sometimes you can see some of the ways things are advertised. Very big palatial houses, they got bathrooms with golden taps and all that, all sorts of things, they say. And they advertise like this in some, in Dubai and all places. And they think that if you have all that, you'll be happy in life. Taps with gold covered taps. Things like that. It's advertised, isn't it? And some palaces with all the facilities, what is inside. So, kamoba bhoga varama edava didi nishchida, Krishna is saying here. So, what it results is, Krishna is saying here, that all these things will create further problems because it turns into dambham and darpam. In the Asham, Krishna mentions there that these kind of opulences, it creates in a person dambham and darpam, which we have spoken before. Like that's what has happened to Nalagavera and Manigriva also. So, then along with that he says, Asha Pasha Shadair Baddha. Asha Pasha Shadair Baddha. Because one sannyasi, long ago, this incident happened. A sannyasi, and while he was a brahmachari, he was very austere. That's what's expected in brahmachari life, isn't it? Very austere he was. And he lived that life, and he studied Bhagavad Gita, Vedantam, everything very well. And he had a good discipline also, sadhana, in his life. So a good sadhana, he studied Shastram well, and he lived an austere life in his brahmachari days. And later on, much later, he progressed in his spiritual life, and he became in charge of a mutt, Mataadhipati, they call it. I mean, someone who is, like you can say, something like a temple president. But in the old concept, he wasn't responsible for the mutt. They had the mutt in the mutt. So, so when later on, when you become in charge of a mutt or a spiritual institution like that, when you go, and that means you have administrative responsibility, and you also have wealth from the mutt. Matham has wealth, isn't it? Because in the olden days, these mathams had financial backing from the kings. The kings, they used to give sufficient finances for the matham to run. And they will have their own temples and institutions they run. And they have that responsibility also, because although he was a brahmachari, although he had a life of austerity, although he had studied Shastram, Vedantam, and Bhagavad Gita, Upanishads, everything. And when he became this responsibility of managing the mutt, it has come to him. Along with that, a lot of other things also comes. That means that if you are in charge of a mutt, you will have some security from the... It comes as a sort of... for example... If you are a madam, head of a mart, the kings will provide automatically a certain amount of people to go along with you when you are traveling. You'll be carried in the palanquin. You'll be given certain ornaments, jewelry to wear, because you represent that particular mart. Not because of anything else, than because he's the head of the mart. So that comes in a natural way, because these institutions, they have been given the wealth and these facilities by the local kings who maintain those institutions. But he will be only the spiritual head of that mutt. So, normally, if you are the head of a big mutt, you will have sometimes accompanied by the police, or sometimes the army of the king will also accompany you when you are traveling somewhere. You have taken in a procession somewhere, for example. So, in one occasion, up to this time he became this head of the mutt, he felt a lot of independence in life, simple brahmachari life. But now he has taken sannyasam, he became the head of the mutt. But prior to that, he felt a lot of independence. He could travel anywhere alone, he had no problems. And he lived austere and felt that independence in his life. But the moment he became the sannyasi and the head of the mutt, all these things has become a part of his life. So in one occasion, he told the other people in the mud, "I don't want any of these," he said. He said to them, "I don't like all these things," because he was used to his simple lifestyle before. But it is mandatory that if you are the head of the mud, you should have all these, the people whom you are supposed to go along with, isn't it? So, and they also given a very expensive jewelry to wear. And that has got a lot of stones on that, Maradaga jewels on that garland to put it on. And he has to wear that. He has to wear that. And he had to wear that, and he has to go on these processions with them. And he says later after that, "This is how you get trapped." "This is how you get trapped. That you will initially, you lived your life according to the Shastram. You are happy with that. But circumstances in life puts you into a spot like this. And then you are forced to accept so many things." And in that way he says there that the how you get trapped by Maya. How you get trapped by Maya. So, Ashapasha Shadair Baddham, that verse if you look, that you may not have it, but it will be created in you by the world. The world will create that inside. He says, Ashapasha Shadair Baddha Kama Krodha Parayana Ihande Kama Bhogartham Anye Anartha Sanjayan means that somehow or the other, that desire was generated inside by the association with the world. He on his own had no such desire, because he studied, suppose at a young age, when you are 15, 16 years old, if you have studied Bhagavad Gita well, and if you have studied Bhagavadam well, Upanishads well, it's very difficult for you to become a materialist then. After knowing that truth, what is spoken in the, and if you have the faith in the Shastram, and if you have lived a life of austerity, simplicity, and then it is very difficult to come to this material life and to enjoy like the world, the rest of the world, isn't it? You withdraw yourself from that. But sometimes, even in their life, it can happen this way. Today, they may be brahmachari and living a life of austere life, and Shastram is there, but due to influence of the material world, suppose you become a head of the mud or a president or whatever it comes in life, it can change your way of life. And Ashabhasha Shadair Bhadda Kama Krodha Parayana Ihande Kama Bhogartham Anye Anartha Sanjayan. At that time, that Sanjayan means the collecting nature builds up inside a person. Builds up inside. Why Krishna is saying this? How careful one has to be in life. That how wealth can get inside, and once it gets inside, then we will forget all these things what Krishna has spoken. We will try to think that we are like Ambarish and Janaka and Rishabhadev, but we won't be like that. They had so much wealth, in spite of that they were not affected, isn't it? Remember Ambarish's story if you read in the Bhagavatam. So much wealth they had, but they were not affected. So, the important thing here is that Ihande Kama Bhogartham Anye Yanartha Sanjayan. Krishna says that Sanjita nature will come up to him in such a way that it will be very, very difficult, Krishna says, to come out of that. So that's why if you look into Lalita Sahasra Namam, 1000 names, he says there, Srimada, Srimaharatni, Srimal Simhasaneshwari, Chidagnigunda Sambhodam, Devagarya Samadhyama. If you, there, Devagarya Samadhyama mentions that, you will see, referring to there, Srimada Shri Maharaji Srimal Simhasaneshwari Chid Agni Kunda Sambhudam Devakarya Samudyada. This is how Sri Parvati, who is in charge of this material energy, how she is addressed in the first verse itself. It mentions like this. It's a very interesting verse to look at, to understand her position. Look at her, how she is dealing with this situation. It mentions there that she, by very nature of Sri Parvati, it mentions there, Raga Swarupa Pashadhyam. That means ragam, attachment, and this aversion. Krodha Ganam Kushojjwala Mano Rubekshu Kodanda Panjadan Matra Sayaga. While talking about her, Lila Sahasranamam says there, her very nature is like this. You know what Krishna is saying in these verses? Ashabasha Shadair Bhadha Kama Krodha Parayana Ihande Kama Bhogatam Anye Yanartha Sanjayana. Now, these things, where do they come from? They come from Prakriti. They come from Prakriti. Which is again what Krishna is saying before. That divine nature comes from the self, Atma. Demoniac nature comes from the Prakriti. And that is why when Sri Parvati was glorified, it mentions that Srimada, Sri Maharaji, Srimal Simhasaneshwari, her, she is glorified. Chid Agni Kunda Sambhuda Devakarya Samudhida. Where did she come from? She come from also Chit Shakti. Chid Agni. Chid Agni means Chit Shakti. And from Chit Shakti she was born. What purpose? Devakarya Samudhida. For meeting this, running this purpose of maintaining this material energy. She has also come from the Chit Shakti. She has also come from the Chit Shakti. And how is she? Udyalbhanu Sahasrabha Chaturbahu Samanvita Raga Swarupa Vashadya Krodha Karang Kushojjwala and Mano Rubekshu Kodanda Panjadan Matra Sayaga Nijaruna Prabhabhura Majjad Brahmanda Mandala. So what is important here is, if you look at these two sides, Krishna's important point, what Krishna is making here, is that she keeps us, how? How does she keep us in her control? Through ragam and dvesham. That is her two weapons. Ragam dvesham, through that, she keeps this material world going. Imagine that everyone who comes to the material world, he'll come with this raga dvesham. Raga dvesham is inside in every one of us. In every one of us. So, the problem is, it is mentioned here as a rope to bind. Which one? Ragam and dvesham. But it's a rope which you can't see, but she binds us with that. Isn't it? Raga suruba pashadya. It's like a rope. And how? Krodha kara angushojjwala. Krodha kara angushojjwala. Angusha means, you know that stick with which the mahout controls the elephant. If you look at, it'll have a stick and at the end there is a hook like this. What he does is, he puts it at the back of the ear and pulls it, and it's very painful. Hook, the mahout. When he puts that angusham, it is called, I don't know what is it called in English, but it's angusham. Angusham means it's a long stick, because he can stand on the ground, and at the long stick, and at the end, it's a metal hook attached to that. What he does is, he puts it at the back of the ear of the elephant and pulls it, and it's very painful. And immediately the elephant will understand that the mahout is, wants him to be disciplined proper way, whatever it is, what if he's misbehaving. So that is angusham. So this krotham, ragadvesham, is like this angusham of the mahout. She puts it on our ear and pulls us when she wants it, and we dance. And we dance. That's what it's saying here. So in order to keep us in this material existence, ragadvesham is necessary. Otherwise, this will not happen. Mano rubeksha kodanda. So this mano rubeksha kodanda, this power, which is Chit Shakti, which is in the form of a person, we address her as Sri Parvati. But that energy or that force that comes from that Ragadvesham, which comes in the form of Ragadvesham, is also coming from the Chitshakti. So, that is also power that is coming from the Andaryami. Chitshakti is the Andaryami inside. And it creates all this Ragam, Dvesham, Krotham, Kamam, Krotham, everything in us, and keeps us under tight control. Under tight control. That is what Krishna is saying here. Asha Pasha Shadeur Badhva Kama Krotha Parayana Ihande Kama Bhogartam Anyayanartha Sanjayan. How powerful these forces are operating inside us and keeping us under their control. We don't take notice of any of these things. We think we are independent, don't we? What independence have we got? On the one side, she is Lila Sahasranama is saying to us that Sri Parvati is so powerful that through these two ropes of Ragam and Dvesham, she binds us here. And then if we still don't listen, she puts this Angusham behind our ear. Mano Rubekshu Kodanda Panjadan Matra Sayaga, it says. So Asha Bhasha Shadarudha. And you can't see any of them outside. It's like a cobweb inside, created, invisible, isn't it? And if you ask, what for all this, there is no answer to that. There is no answer to that. That is the reality. You don't know why it is like that. There is no answer to that question. There is a story about this, I think mentioned this before also, that a donkey was living in the house of a washerman. And the washerman, you can remember in the olden days in the villages, there was no washing machines. Nowadays everywhere there is washing machines, isn't it? Now we ourselves have become the washerman. Somebody else will do the washing up. But today we have to do it everything yourself. Anyway, that's the progress what we have made now. We have become everything now. So in the olden times, when there was washerman who will collect all the clothes, he'll put it on top of the donkey and take it to the river. And the river, he will wash all the clothes, dry them, and bring them back and give it back to you. And you give some. But this, his vehicle is this, his transportation vehicle is this donkey in the villages. So donkeys, they don't need anything. They will be satisfied. You don't have to feed him. Or he will go and eat some grass, whatever is there. Or even if he finds some paper, he will eat that paper also. So anything like that he will eat. That is his nature. So, but the washerman will use him very well, because he will put a huge load of washing on him and he will beat him heavily to take him to the riverbank to wash the clothes. And he used to beat him up very well, but he doesn't give anything to eat. Nor does he give him any other help, except that he uses him all the time. But if you ask him, why don't you leave him and go? He won't go. The donkey, that is the donkey's nature. Donkey thinks, if master is not there, I cannot live. How will I eat? He thinks like that. This is the donkey mentality, isn't it? So in the same house, there was a dog. Washerman has a dog as well. So the dog, say, one day he saw this washerman was beating this donkey very badly, beat him. So after the washerman went away, the dog felt a little compassion for the donkey. So the dog says to the donkey that, why do you stay here? He is not giving you anything. And you don't need anything from here. You go out and eat whatever you like and wander around freely. You don't have to work here for this. So, at that time he says to him, no, I can go, but I am staying here because I have some hope, he says. There is some hope I have, he says. So what is that hope? Hope is this. His hope is that this washerman has got a daughter. And this daughter, parents had to arrange the marriage, isn't it? So, families had come to negotiate the marriage for the daughter with their son. But every time they come, the daughter said, I don't want to marry him. So this carried on for a few times,
So the washerman got upset with the daughter. So he told her that, look, if you keep on saying that, I don't like him, I don't like him, I don't like him, one day I will do one thing, I'll marry you to that donkey, he said. And the donkey heard this. So donkey says that, I'm living here because I heard him saying this. One day he's going to marry her to me, he said. So, so similarly, Krishna is saying to us, you are all living in this world with this hope, like this donkey's life. That's what our life is all about. Because you are thinking in your life that something is going to change, everything is going to come out well at the end. That is, with that hope you are carrying on, you are not realizing in what state you are in. To create vairagyam inside, Krishna is saying this to us, to wake us up, that not taking spiritual life seriously, instead, kashavasha shadarbaddham, kama krodha parayanam. Why? We can't even say what our desires are. We don't even know. Only thing is, when it comes out, you see, oh, I had that desire in me before. That's why it has come out in this way. Isn't it? That is why Bhartrahari mentions this, how desires builds up and how desires manifest in a person. So, even he says here that, you know, Bhartrahari says there, they are so expert, ashabhasham means this desires, they are so expert, they will build up inside. They don't have it today. And there is no chance of them having it tomorrow also. There is no chance of it having them. Only in their imagination they are building up all these desires. In their imagination, that it will all be alright. A big house to live with swimming pool, and expensive car, holidays, this, that and the other. Everything you can build up in your... Bhartrahari says this, that you can do all these things. Tektum vansha matra parigraham avibaram tektum na shaktavayam. Bhartrahari's words. He knows very well it's not going to happen, but still desiring more and more. Ashabhasha shader baddham. That is what Krishna is saying here. Ashabhasha shader baddham kama krodha parayana. That kama krodha parayana. All this is nothing but Krishna says it's a prison house. It's an imprisonment inside. Inside us, you are imprisoned in that way. You are in the prison inside. And keeping these desires inside, fighting and quarreling with others. Husband and the wife, they fight each other. Husband says, I'm going to buy a cow, he says. Wife says him that, I have kept some money for that. I've collected some money. But he says, I'm going to buy 4 pots. With that money, husband is saying, why you need 4 pots? Wife says, when you buy the cow, when we milk the cow, to collect the milk, we need a pot, isn't it? So husband is asking her, why do you need 4 pots for that? She says to him, these are all village stories. She says to him, one pot will collect the milk for us, and another pot will collect it for selling it to others. And the third pot will collect the milk to give it to my family members. She says, my brother, my sister, my mother and all of them. But husband says to him, you are going to take my milk from my cow and give it to your family members. So, fight started straight away. So, these are all common things in the villages, in village life. So, Krishna says here, this ashabhasham is like that. You build up desires, both husband and wife, and then eventually you develop fighting over that. Always it happens, is it not? Otherwise, you can see always, if you carefully look at it, many, many people, very rich people, they get married and then they divorce in a short time. They will have, a lot of it behind that is finances involved. Finances involved. As I mentioned before, in that chapter of the... Forest of Enjoyment, Shukha Brahmarshi has used some very heavy words there. She calls the wife and the children as jackals and foxes in the forest. And Prabhupada has given also the explanation to that, you can read it in that, why it is called like that. Prabhupada quotes a Hindi poet there and mentions all that.
Anyway, the interesting thing there is, the whether it is husband or wife, it doesn't matter. When it comes to divorce, you can see that the law is such that the man has worked all along his life and acquired some wealth. She says, I have 50% right for that. The law says like that, isn't it? You go to the court, court will say, yes, you have the 50% right for everything, whatever he has accumulated. He hasn't even, he has been so austere while working to create this wealth. But then this happens. This happens in life. So what is important here is, Bhartrihari mentions this, that wealth one day will teach you, the very wealth whom you thought that is going to give happiness to you will give you the greatest distress also. And sometimes it can happen like that. And particularly in the modern world, when you see sometimes some of them walking away with 10 million, 20 million, 50 million after a very short period of married life, you wonder what is going through their heads, isn't it? Sad thing is, you have worked so hard, you made so much money, but you couldn't even use it for a good purpose. Just see the misery behind it. You worked so hard and you made so much money, and then even you couldn't use it for a good purpose. It has gone like this. This is what it is. Asha pasha shader badham kama krotha parayana ihande kama bhogartham anye yanartha sanjayan. It summarizes all that. We'll discuss it tomorrow. All glory to Srila Prabhupada.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai.